I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the clerk please call the roll?
Ms. Becker?
Present.
Ms. Ladiszewski?
Here.
Mr. Gregory?
Present.
Mr. Jones?
Here.
Mr. Keel?
Here.
Mr. Nankervis?
Here.
Ms. Weldon?
Here.
Ms. White?
Here.
Mayor Kelch?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. And we have a special order of business, a proclamation, Engineers Week. And fortunately, we were able to find an engineer at the last minute to read the proclamation. So, Mr. Manager, Mr. Engineer.
Mr. Mayor, from the Office of the Mayor, City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, a proclamation. Whereas February 19th to 25th, 2017 has been designated as National Engineers Week, and whereas the 2017 theme, Engineers Dream Big, recognizes engineers engaging their creativity and technical know-how to transform dreams into reality. And whereas National Engineers Week is celebrated during the week of George Washington's birthday to honor the contributions President Washington, a military engineer and land surveyor, made to engineering. And whereas Southeast Alaska engineers have enhanced the quality of life in Juneau and the Southeast community through public works projects, ports and harbors development, maritime transportation, mining, and improvements to airports, museums, recreational facilities, roadways, schools, and telecommunications. And whereas the Juneau branch of the American Society of Civil Engineers and Alaska Capital Engineers are local sponsors of National Engineers Week, celebrating the local accomplishment of Projects of the Year and Engineer of the Year recognitions within the Juneau region. And whereas since 1983, the National Society of Professional Engineers has contributed time, sponsorship, and resources in support of the National Math Counts Competition Series, a competitive mathematics program that promotes mathematical achievements through a series of fun and engaging B-style contests. And whereas the 2017 Juneau Math Counts competition was held on February 11, 2017 at JD High School, and whereas the Juneau branch of the American Society of Civil Engineers is engaging in hands-on school outreach programs in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics during National Engineers Week to inspire future generations of engineers and scientists, and whereas the Juneau branch has established civil engineer and professional engineer scholarships for high school seniors pursuing Bachelor of Science degrees in the engineering and science fields. Now, therefore, I,
Kendall D. Kelch,
Mayor of the City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, on behalf of the City and Borough Assembly, do hereby proclaim February 19th to 25th, 2017 as National Engineers Week.
Thank you. Well done. Congratulations, engineers. We should have a round of applause, shouldn't we? Approval of the minutes, Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have turned in the minutes to our clerk with some minor corrections.
So do you want to move them?
I move the acceptance of January 19th, 2017 meeting and ask for unanimous consent.
Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Before I move consent, what I wanted to point out was I also had a correction that I'm not sure is grammatical at all. On page 12 of 121 of the packet, or page 3 of 4 regarding the minutes from that meeting, the third paragraph up from the bottom starts with, he said. The second sentence, if you read it the way it's written, would indicate that we had a revenue deficit of approximately $1.6 million due to the community revenue sharing. And that was actually a part of the $1.6 million, but that wasn't all of the $1.6 million that caused us to have the deficit. That's my understanding of what Mr. Bartholomew said, and he's in the back, but I wanted to make sure we got that right, because as I read it, it looks a little implied that we had a $1.6 million reduction in revenue sharing, and I don't believe that was the case. If somebody correct me, including Mr. Bartholomew, if I'm remembering it incorrectly.
We have help on the way. Well, I kind of wondered what the delay would be in our agenda today, and I didn't expect it to be the minutes. But it's always something that's going to get us.
Right. The community revenue sharing is a portion of the shortfall, but $1.6 million was the preliminary shortfall overall.
Okay. Overall, okay. I just want to make sure the way you read it, it reads as if it was the community revenue sharing, and that wasn't solely the reason for that shortfall. Thank you. And I don't, Madam Clerk had some language to clarify that in the second sentence. I don't, and it really doesn't matter to me what it says as long as at that point gets through. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And with that correction, I would not have any objection with Ms. Becker's motion.
All right, it's been moved to accept the minutes of January 19th, 2017, special assembly meeting, 2017-02. Any objections? Minutes are approved. Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move January 23rd, 2017 minutes and ask for unanimous consent. There were some minor corrections turned in. Thank you.
Seeing no objection, the minutes are approved. Manager's request for agenda changes.
I have no changes, Mr. Mayor.
Public participation on non-agenda items. And we will start with Mr. Quayle. Couple of minutes, please.
William Quayle, 415 Willoughby, number 305. Can't say I've not been perseverance this about trying to get a regulation change for pedicab. One of the main reasons I want to do this is you can't register a vehicle for pedicab. They're bicycles. And the regulation, as it's written right now, it asks for auto insurance. You can't do that. Number two would be to actually go. The limitation for taking passengers, the way the regulation is set up, is it's only limited to downtown. I can take somebody from Fred Meyer to the mall, and I can't do that. Okay, and I think it isn't fair, really. And also, when it comes to the fees are asking $1,500. SICA charges $400, and they ask for general liability, which is the right way to do it. Also, when it comes to the lights, I do have lights I can run at night, whereas right now they got it so. When they made this regulation, the taxi cab drivers tried to do as much as they can to keep us out of business. And I'm trying to get it so we can be in business. And I'm not going to be the only company that's working. I'll be the second one. But I'm trying to get it so when people ask me on the street, when they see me just using my bike, my pedicab, it's not an arm and a leg, and that's not prohibitive to get into the business. And you're trying to get it so it's business friendly. Also, a little bit of frustration because they took so long on this, okay? The harbors is actually determined how much they're going to charge for your loading fees, and I tried to get it down to $200. And if they have not approved the harbor's budget, I would appreciate if they have somebody would amend the budget so that for a pedicab it's $200 instead of $300. Because we can't carry as many people. It's not fair to be treated like a big, huge fleet. I'm not a fleet. And the same thing when it comes to the regulation for a pedicab for the city, we're treated just the same as what a fleet has to pay. And I don't think that's fair. It really is not. And I realize the city has its problems. They got to make so much money in the red. Okay, I play SimCity all the time. It's one of my favorite games. But that's the way it is.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Thank you. Before I call on the next one, we have someone that is signed up for camping, and I will take that now. I have been advised that we will accept anyone that signs up for further discussion on camping. And that would be Sean Summerall.
Yeah, I was Sean Summerall, 5597 Anchor Street. And I'm not gonna speak on the camping. I think there's enough said on that. I heard on the radio something about they were gonna exempt the cruise ship tax, and I didn't know if that was for the people getting off the cruise ships. And if, you know, if you got all these things you want to do around town, fix these things, build these things, they're paying a lot to get here to Alaska. They need the experience to, when they leave out of here, if it's nice, they could say, yeah, go to Juneau, Alaska. It's nice there when you're taxed too much or, you know, exempt. Are they going to say yeah? But it'll hurt the economy around here if we're just like letting everybody here come on, you know, you got to tax something. They can't just be exempt, or maybe I should look into it more or something. But they definitely need to clean it up for sure around here because it looks like a dump. I don't know if it's the birds or the moose or the. Yeah, I don't know how the trash is getting there. I just know it needs to be picked up. And I think they have money for that, too, for the cleanup. There's a lot of people that need jobs that can't work like a regular job just because maybe their mental illness won't let them or, different things happen, different schedules. It's not as perfect world as a lot of people think. A lot of people watch too much TV. But there is a lot of people out there that could use jobs to keep this cleaned up and, you know, maybe raise the taxes on the people coming out here. If it's pleasant, they're going to pay it. They're going to pay it no matter what. They want to be up here. There's a lot of people that need jobs around. That's all I have to say. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Summerall. Kathy Tran. Ms. Tran, if you would give us your name and address, please.
Okay. Sorry. Hi, my name is Kathy Tran, 8242 Aspen Avenue. I'm a junior at Thunder Mountain High School, and I'm here representing my student government today as the all-student body vice president. So for the past year, I've been working with my student government to facilitate a conference for the Alaska Association of Student Governments, which I'm going to refer to now as AUSOG. So AUSOG is a biannual conference. There's one in the spring, there's one in the fall, and it works on a rotational cycle from various host schools around the state. At the conference, students are trained in leadership and are provided opportunities to advocate for local, state, and national issues. So having attended AUSOG conferences of the past, I just want to share my experience with you and how I've grown as a leader because of it. OSOG presents me the opportunity to interact with intelligent students from all around Alaska. We participate in general assemblies where we discuss resolutions. Resolutions are submitted documents from varying Alaskan schools that convey the opinions and ideas of students, and then we as a collectively determine whether or not we are going to adopt that as an entire student body. I marvel at the fact that we have such an invaluable platform where students can let their voices be heard. So I stand before the Juneau Assembly today to request $500 to $1,000 towards the Thunder Mountain High School student government in support of the facilitation of student voice and leadership. I thank you for your time, and I hope that the CBJ considers a contribution of $500 to $1,000 to OSOG. And I don't see this as a cost. I see this as an investment into your futures, our futures, because we, the students, are leaders of the future. So thank you.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So that concludes the first part of public participation. There is another portion of the agenda where public participation is welcomed. All right. That brings us to the consent agenda. Is there a public request for consent agenda changes other than ordinance or introduction?
Mr. Mayor, I believe we have one request.
Representative Christ-Hawkins, is that correct?
That's right, Mayor Kelsch, thank you. For the record, see if I can bring this microphone into compliance. Maybe not. it's just like our fiscal problem, I'm afraid. For the record, Jonathan Christ Tompkins, Big Marshall Island, Sitka, although a part-time denizen of Juneau, constituent, I guess I could say. And I'm testifying on the resolution relating to the Petersburg land transfer with the state of Alaska. And
so formally, I believe you would wish that get pulled from consent.
Or we could deal with it all right now, if that is amenable to the body.
Sure.
Let's do it right now. We have pulled it from the consent agenda, and you are going to speak to it, please.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor Kelston. I apologize if I'm out of order here.
You're not.
This is a piece of legislation that I'm sponsoring on the House side, and Senator Stedman, also Sitka, but who also, like myself, represents Petersburg in the Senate, are introducing, and I mostly wanted to take the opportunity to comment this evening to thank the Assembly for considering this resolution. And I've been familiar with some of the back history with land in the Petersburg area and local government, and I just thought this was an incredibly gracious and thoughtful gesture by the City and Borough of Juneau, and so I wanted to offer my thanks and gratitude on behalf of the Petersburg community and that part of Southeast. And we're hoping that the legislation is going to proceed and pass and be signed by the governor right now. All indications indicate that will be the case. And mostly just thought this was most welcome, and I think is going to inspire a lot of goodwill and neighborly relations, and wanted to impart that. So thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Any questions? Thank you for your service. Thank you for coming down. Assembly requests for consent agenda changes. Mr. Nan Curvis, Assembly action.
Mr. Mayor, I would move we adopt the consent agenda, and I would ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Motion carried. Which now brings us to public hearing. Ordinance 2016-09. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $700,000 as partial funding for the construction of Aurora Harbor Phase 2, funding provided by the Harbor's Enterprise Fund's fund balance.
Mr. Manager.
The Docks and Harbors Department has requested
an appropriation ordinance that would move $700,000 to the existing Aurora Harbor Rebuild Capital Improvement Project for planned improvements of Aurora Harbor Rebuild Phase 2, specifically removal and reconstruction of a portion of the headwalk, main walks E, F, and G, electrical and lighting, domestic water lines, and fire suppression system. Project includes moving the existing boat shelters to access the work, returning the boat shelters to the new facility upon completion. Funds would come from the Harbor Fund, which has a current balance of $3,874,900. Public Works and Facilities Committee reviewed this ordinance at its January 30, 2017 meeting. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Is there any public comment? Anyone from the public that wishes to comment on this? Seeing none, Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that we approve ordinance 2016-09 and ask for unanimous consent.
Mr. Kittle.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess a question for the attorney. Did this Stettler Harbor, or sorry, this is Aurora Harbor. Mr. Mayor, I have removed my objection.
All right. I do not see any objection, so the motion has carried.
Just have to agree here.
All right. Ordinance 2016-09. Madam Clerk.
AD, an ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $250,000 as funding for the Juneau School District Deferred Maintenance and Minor Improvements Capital Improvement Project, funding provided by the general government's fund balance.
We're back to the general fund balance. Okay. Mr. Manager.
This ordinance would appropriate $250,000 to the Juneau School District JSD deferred maintenance and minor improvements, including carpet replacement, water heaters, et cetera. Funding is provided from the general government funds fund balance. The Assembly Finance Committee approved this action at its January 11, 2017 meeting. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Is there anyone from the public that wishes to comment on this? Seeing none, Ms. Welton.
I move that we adopt ordinance 2016-09-AD and ask for unanimous consent.
Mr. Dan Kervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I object.
All right.
May I speak to my objection?
Of course.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't object to deferred maintenance. In fact, I don't think we put enough money towards deferred maintenance. But I do object to waiting to halfway through the year and pulling it out of fund balance. I think it ought to be calculated in with the budget when we do the budget every spring, not halfway through the year. Thank you.
All right. Do you maintain your objection?
I do, Mr. Mayor.
Any other discussion? Mr. Jones.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. I, too, object, and I think that more the reason is that this $250,000 was part of a request based on the increased enrollment for us to fund closer to the cap. We opted to pull it out and not make it as part of the cap. I agree somewhat with Mr. Nankervis that this came in mid-year. Should be more calculated in if it's going to be true deferred maintenance. But since this was originally part of a calculation that changed in mid-year because of increased school enrollment, I can understand why it's here. But I think we should have funded it as part of the funding to the cap and not outside the cap. And for that reason, I'm going to object as well.
Further discussion? Are you ready for the vote? Will the clerk please call the roll?
Mr. Nankervis?
No.
Ms. Weldon?
Yes.
Ms. White?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mr. Gregory?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
No.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mayor Kelch?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Ordinance 2016-10A. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance appropriating funds for FY17 school district operations.
Mr. Manager.
This ordinance would increase the FY17 school district budget as follows. A general operations increase, $2,034,200. Contribution to fund balance, $786,000. For a total increase of $2,820,200. Funding source is state foundation funding. These adjustments are requested by the school district due to student enrollment increasing above projections, which increased the state foundation funding support to education. The Assembly Finance Committee forwarded this request to the Assembly at its January 11, 2017 regular meeting. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Is there anyone from the public that wishes to speak on this? Seeing none, Ms. White.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I move the Assembly adopt Ordinance 2016-10A and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objection? Motion carries. Moves us to unfinished business. OMO LCC versus Board of Adjustment. Madam Clerk.
This is a decision on the appeal regarding variance 2015-0030.
Madam Attorney.
The proposed draft was circulated to the Assembly and the parties. There were no written objections received, and the decision is now before you for adoption.
Ms. Gladyszewski.
I would move that we adopt our proposed decision.
Is there discussion? Seeing none, so carried. Meek versus Planning Commission and Miller Construction. Madam Clerk.
This is the decision on the appeal regarding conditional use permit use 2016-0016.
Madam Attorney.
Your draft decision was circulated to the parties. There was a written objection received by the appellant that was provided to you and is in your packet as well. This is now also up for your adoption or consideration.
Thank you. Mr. Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move that the Assembly approve the decision on appeal as submitted by the attorney. Would ask that we include in that decision the objection. I believe that's the right. Their objection gets included in with the decision or not?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay. Then I would move that we approve the decision on appeal as submitted by the attorney.
Okay, is there objection? Motion carried. This brings us to ordinance 2016-44. Madam Clerk.
This is an ordinance amending the city and borough code relating to camping in the downtown Juneau area.
Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, when we last left this issue on January 23rd, the Assembly continued consideration of this issue to this meeting. So you should pick up your conversation where you left off on the 23rd.
And that was to have Assembly discussion, correct? Let me take a short at ease with the attorney so I can check on something. So we'll need to back up to public comment by law, and I have Catherine Duncan and Paula Rohlbacher. Ms. Duncan?
Yes, hi, my name is Catherine Duncan. I'm Southeast Native Alaskan. I am homeless. I have been homeless for about 3 months. I know how hard it is for everybody that has businesses. Jeez, it's hard on us too. It really is, because you don't know where to go, and you're not welcome wherever you go. You have a label on you, regardless if you went out working on jobs, and being disabled, I can hardly walk around, so it's really hard to find places for me to go that I could go sit down, especially in the wintertime. In the wintertime, it's really hard because I'm looking out after the ones that are out there with me. And I'm using my own funds to help them out because, like you guys, like I'm sorry, like it is put this way. Leave them alone. Leave them where they lay. For that's where they pick. That's where they choose. Not one of us have chosen this life. I am a victim of violence. I've been thrown out into the streets so many times. I've been coming home to see my own family as to being treated like I don't belong. I come home and I feel like I'm a ghost in my own hometown. I wanted to have a job because that's the only thing I know how to do is to work my life. I've worked since I was 14 years old. That's the only thing I know how to do. And now I'm disabled. I can't even hardly walk. I thank God there's a lot of them that are out there that are with me that have a heart, that will lift me up when I can't walk anymore because my legs and my hips can't work anymore. And the medications that they want me on, I don't want to take because I used to be an alcoholic before. It took me to my deathbed. So now I'm out there holding up everybody else. And I'm suffocating because every one of you guys are saying, we don't matter. It is a hard choice to have to go through when you wake up every day knowing that you don't know where you're going to go or what you're going to do. I have a family. I have grandchildren. I don't like them being ashamed of me, but I am ashamed of myself. And it ain't by choice I'm out here. It was never by my choice. Because I was working in my home, taking the homeless off the streets. I was detoxing them. I was taking them and saying, somebody cares about you. And because I was doing that, they kept raising my rent and raising my rent and raising my rent. And I couldn't fight them, and I wasn't about ready for it because I was the only one out there helping them. So now I'm out there in the streets along with them. And I'm looking at every one of you guys and I'm saying, have mercy, because not very many people have jobs out there. There's not very many people that are going to stay around and say, I'm going to live my life for you guys. How could we live our lives for you guys when you don't want us to live? How can we have mercy when there ain't none? I have children. I have a son that don't even want to speak to me because I'm working on the streets as the homeless. I lost my own grandchildren because of this. My own children.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Miss Rohrbacher.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor. And assembly members. My name is Paula Gonzalez Rohrbacher. I live at 314 B Street in Douglas. I am a board member of NAMI, which is an organization that advocates and educates people, advocates for and educates people about mental illness. Mental illness is very widespread among the homeless community, as you well know. I also work for an agency that assists homeless people in various ways. I would ask that you please delay the vote on this ordinance until we have adequate warming shelters in place in the downtown area. Warming shelters, I think, would help alleviate some of the problems of people camping in the doorways of businesses. It would give people a place to go where they are warm and dry. A warming shelter doesn't need to have beds. It doesn't need to have anything, food or warm beverages. It just needs to be a place with a roof and four walls that people can go to get out of the wind and cold. This past weekend was horrendous in terms of weather. The short time that I had to be out in the weather was very, very unpleasant, and all I could do all weekend long was think about the people who had no choice but to be out there in the weather. So I ask you please to delay this vote until you have warming shelters in place, and then see what an effect that has, and then make a decision on the camping ordinance. Thank you very much.
Are there any questions for clarification?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, that brings us back to the assembly. So ordinance 2016-44 is before you. It's their discussion. Shall we put this before us so we can see if there's objection, Mr. Keel?
No, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Yes, I was wondering if we could change the effective date to April 15th.
Well, we need a motion on the floor before we can amend it.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'll let someone else do that one.
So is there discussion at all, or do you want to put the motion up there and go from there? That's better.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move ordinance 2016-44 and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there
objection?
Okay. Mr. Keel, do you wish to speak to your objection?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess I would start with a couple of questions for city staff. And I'm not sure if the manager wants to handle them himself or defer them to the police chief. But I'm particularly interested, we have not to this point had any discussion about cost and the expected costs of that the city would incur if we were to adopt this ordinance. So I'm thinking about personnel time. I'm thinking about, I'm sure you've got an analysis. I would be interested in what you foresee in terms of cost.
Mr. Mayor, I think we should bring the chief up to discuss this topic.
Excuse me, I have a little bit of a cold, so if I start coughing and sneezing on you, it's not intentional. We don't anticipate increasing staffing in order to enforce this this ordinance. I think we'll actually reduce some of the calls we have in other places, and so it would not be an increase to cost at the department. We could do it with what we are currently staffed at and what we currently have in our budget. We would not come back and ask for anything additional.
Just going to follow up on that.
You may.
Be worth drilling down just a little bit. So as I read my emails, there are folks who seem to understand that this will be a nightly enforcement tool. Between midnight and 7, there are folks who seem to think it'll be intermittent. What kind of plan does JPD have in terms of frequency of enforcement?
So we already currently go and check on these folks every night, nightly. We have an obligation to do that under Title 47, and we do that. So there's already officers out checking on them. What this would do is give us a way of doing some enforcement while we're doing that checking. And I think the second part of your question is how we would implement it. Was the second part of your question? So what we would do, we put out a plan previously about kind of how we want to deal with this. It's contact, connect, enforce, and divert. So what we would do first is contact them, try to see if they have any family, connect them with whatever family they might have. That's the first thing we start doing. Then we want to try to connect them with the many service providers we have in town, which we have some really good service providers in town. So we would try to connect them with the service providers. We've already run operations which we take those service providers out with us. I think they do it on their own as well, where they have outreach teams they're trying to do. So we try to connect them to get them into whatever service that could help them out. We do want to be able to do enforcement as well. I think that's part of a bigger plan. So we would take care of that part. And then also the last part, was clean. We need to clean up areas if there has something that's been taking place. So because this would be a new ordinance, and I don't know when you'll decide to have it be implemented, we would go out pre-implementation and do that previous. So we're already contacting. We'll contact them. Let them know, hey, starting this date is when this ordinance takes in place. Here's the services that are out there. Can we help you get to those services? What can we do to get you into the services that exist? So we would do that a couple of times at least before this ordinance went in place, so people weren't caught off guard or didn't know that the enforcement was coming at some point. So we'd give a period of time in which we contacted, told them what was coming, tried to connect them with family, tried to connect them with services. And I might say that the service community in the last couple of months has done a really good job of reducing the number of people that are down there already. So I think they've had some great success in doing that already. So that's kind of how I see it getting implemented.
So for clarification, though, you have the officer time and the social service providers have teams between midnight and 7 a.m. to call families, to connect people with social services every night between midnight and 7 without adding staff?
We're not going to do that every night between midnight and 7, no. What we would do is proactively at least twice before the ordinance went in place. Last time we called around to the service organizations, we got most of them that would come out with us. We were successful in doing that. So we would do that again a couple of times pre-ordinance taking place. When the ordinance took place, then the officers would be able to do the enforcement, and they are out already every night and morning checking on folks. And we'd continue to run that kind of operation in the future. It's the model we're looking at doing. So enforcement is one part of a bigger solution to help out down there. But it's an important part, and right now we're unable to do that.
So the contact, connect, and connect with service part, that's intermittent, and then the enforcement is nightly.
It would be. All the enforcement we do depends on what else is going on. And so I can't say every single night there's going to be an officer available to go around and see that. It depends on what's going on. We are always prioritizing our workload. It'd be similar to, we also need to make sure people aren't speeding on Egan. We have to take care of that. There's a whole host of things we have to do. But we are already going around and checking on these folks, making sure they're okay. We're already making those contacts. And so we're already in the area contacting, doing everything shy of the enforcement. So it would not be a significant increase to what staff is already doing. And the hope is we'd be able to get them into those services and get them into the many opportunities that there might be out there. And we've seen a big reduction from 2.5 months ago. And so if we're able to do that, that would actually free officer time up to deal with a lot of the other problems that we need to get to as well.
So then, Chief, to shift into the enforcement piece, then the next question that I've had a lot of folks ask, and has been a real bugaboo for other communities that have tried this sort of thing, has been when someone doesn't move along, how then does JPD deal with that person's property if JPD needs to take them into custody?
So as I've discussed previously, what we try to garner is what I've explained is voluntary compliance. So that is always the way we try to enforce stuff. So we will go and say, hey, here's the law. Here's what we need to do. We need you to whatever the ordinance says. So we try to gain voluntary compliance. If they were not to comply with our request to move, that would, in my understanding of the laws, that would become a violation of the disorderly conduct ordinance, which would give us the option of either writing a ticket or taking someone to a jail for disorderly conduct. We usually write the ticket because jail doesn't get us a whole lot. But it gives us some additional authority. If we were to end up taking someone to jail, we would have to take their property and hold it for them while they went to jail.
Okay, and then the resources that JPD has in terms of logging and cataloging and storing and disposing of that property.
So we're already set up to do this. Again, we had previous, so this isn't a new authority I've tried to explain. There were some changes in how we did trespassing a while back. So this is something, if we were talking last year, we were already doing this. So this isn't like it would be a new burden on the police department. We already had all those things in place because we were doing this enforcement in years past. It's just been this last period of time in which we've not been doing it. And so all those things you're talking about, we already had in place because it was an enforcement activity we were able to do under the trespassing law in the past.
Can you give me a sense of how frequently JPD needed to dispose of property from homeless folks?
By dispose of, can you?
Did everybody who got who wouldn't move along, did they all come back to JPD and claim their sleeping bags and their stuff, or did we have disposal
process? I don't have any hard numbers for you. I would have to go back and research that for you to get you an accurate number.
Thank you.
I have Ms. Walden and Ms. Becker.
Since we have the chief, I wanted to ask him a quick question. You said before when you spoke to us and emailed just recently that you see this as a tool that enables you to move people off private property. Can you speak to that, please?
There is a need to have a holistic approach, I think, is the way I would try to phrase it. I think it would be foolish for me to come here and say, hey, look, if you pass me a couple of laws, I'll do nothing but enforce and we'll take care of this problem. Don't worry about anything else. I think that would be very foolish. By the same token, I think it is a little naive to think, hey, we'll come out with all these services. You don't worry about doing any enforcement. Don't do any enforcement, and we will take care of everything with the services. I don't think either one is able to help out with this problem and fix it on its own. We definitely need each other. And so as it stands right now, I went out Friday morning with the downtown officer. We went out about 5 in the morning, and we went and contacted everyone. And there was they didn't have warrants. They weren't in violation of any other laws. There was nothing we could do to get them off of this private property, which was clearly private property, in which I think the owners of that property, had they been there, would have told us, please have this person move. There was nothing we could do to do any enforcement. And as a service organization, which the police department is, we're trying to provide service to these businesses who are saying this is the help we need, and we want to find a way to provide service. So this would give us a tool to do the enforcement that I think is important, along with everything else that also needs to be done. I don't think this is a one solution problem. I think it is a complex problem which requires a lot of things, and this is just one part of that. But again, I think it's an important part. I don't think police officers enforcing the law is somehow mean or evil, or however you want to characterize it. I think that is a important part of helping people to get to these services that we want them to get to.
Do you have a follow-up?
I have a follow-up question. So if you're enacting the amendment and you go to a doorway and to move someone along and they refuse services and they just get up and move to public private properties such as Marine Park, then what happens?
That's kind of a hypothetical question. It really depends on what they do, where they go, and how they get there. I believe our public property camping ordinance is difficult to enforce, if I understand that correctly. So I got that correctly. There are other things that need to be done. That's why we need to have the other stuff that we've talked about. But this is one tool amongst many that are needed.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Becker, and then Ms. Ladishevsky.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm really interested in the homeless being helped and having a place to be. And I like the idea of a campground being open. I think April 1st is when it's supposed to open. And us looking at warming shelters, I think that's wonderful. But meanwhile, we don't have that yet. And you have a responsibility to try to provide whatever services you can, including moving the people off private property. Do you have access to the places in town that are the service organizations that have openings and have a way to take these homeless people? Is there something that could be done to make that information available to our officers so that when they say, Sally, we can send you to a WHERE shelter, we can take you, they have a bed for you and so forth, that you have places to say you can take them or send them?
I don't want to talk for any of the service organizations, but I have never seen one of them not do everything they could do to help out. I can't imagine us having someone, and I know it's happened many times. I know they got some people from aware here where we've called and said, hey, we need help finding a place for this person. And it, even if it didn't fit perfectly in their service model, they've often stepped up and helped out to find a place for them to be. So I have found that our service organizations do a good job in that regard. And I'd point out, if we were talking in December, I would be more in crisis mode, because in December we were in crisis. I was talking with the director of the Glory Hole earlier, and they have done a really good job at helping some of these folks get back into sheltering services and helping people get back to their family wherever they came from. And they've helped a lot of people get to where they were needing to go. JAMI's been actively helping get people into services and getting people off the street. So we've seen a lot of that already taking place. We've seen some pretty good successes in pulling this back. But we still have the fundamental problem is we have no enforcement tool. And so while it's gotten better, if we do nothing, I think we will have the bad element that you heard a lot of people talking about, that they'll return to this area at some point, and we'll be right back where we were in December. So if that answers your question, I fear if I'm being too long. The service organizations have done a great job of helping. I've never found them to not try to help. I think that's their core mission, and I think we, in general, work well with them.
I'm glad to hear that answer, because that should make people feel a little bit better about what we're trying to do and what the police are doing. It's not just going out there. And
again, I don't want to talk to them. I hope they would say they work well with us. We'll see what they say when they come up.
There's something there for the people, and you're trying to make sure they know that, and I think that's a comforting thought. So thank you, Chief.
As an aside, I happen to be anyway, yeah, you're right. Never mind.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There's several threads several questions I have, but I'll pick up on a thread that you started talking about immediately, and that is that you go around and you check on people nightly. And Mr. Keel was talking about costs. So explain to me how it won't be harder to do that if they're not under the eaves downtown. So I'm particularly concerned about the safety of people who will be pushed into the dark woods under the dark bridges that you won't see as readily. Particularly some people, some, you know, vulnerable women who will be pushed there. How is that, A, better, and B, as easy for you to check on?
So the first part, I think, is what we're trying to do is we're trying to help them get into whatever service we can get them into. The goal is not to take them into the woods. So we wouldn't be taking people and directing them to the woods.
No, I'm sorry, Chief, you wouldn't be doing that. But these are people that, for a whole host of reasons, haven't been able to make it in the Glory Hole, haven't been able to make it into various places. And each of those reasons, as you know, more than anybody, all those reasons are very complicated. So I understand that your goal and everybody's goal is to get them into services, but there's a reason they're not. It's hard.
It is, and that's why I don't think it's a simple answer. So I would try to explain it this way: that this is if we were talking a year ago, we would have already been doing this. So I guess you would ask: are people better off now? In those downtown, is the community better off now with people in those downtown entrances? Has this made progress? Is this a better thing? I don't know if it is or not. As a police department, it appears to me that we have additional problems arising by having the population in those specific areas, that that is not a, a good solution. I don't know that in the woods is a good solution either, but where we are right now is not a good solution. We spend more time now than we were a year ago working on this. So if the question is what's this going to happen to manpower and police department resources, we spent less time having to enforce and do these things a year ago than we do now. So if we could get that enforcement tool back, I think that does not overburden the police department. It actually helps us to have time to do other things. I personally don't think a good place for people to go is off in the woods, especially as you describe. I think that's a heartbreaking situation. These are hard choices. Hopefully we can divert them into the great service organizations. You know, if we had an effective trespassing model in place, we would do the same enforcement, and you'd be talking about the same issues, but we'd be talking about it because of trespassing, which may or may not cause the same type of controversy, but the enforcement on the ground would almost look identical as to what the camping one would do. It doesn't change the dynamics of how we would how we would do enforcement. Right. So I don't know. I have a really good answer for you. I hope we don't have people go there. They're heartbreaking stories, and those occur all the time. But I'm not sure that asking. Our core mission, if you read our mission statement, is to help people to live without fear, and that's our core mission, and we're struggling with that. We're having a hard time with that, and that's our core mission. And given the stuff we have right now in place for us to do enforcement, it's really hard for us to fulfill that core mission. I want to help these folks out as much as anyone. You know, there's impassioned talks, and I feel for them. I've talked to a lot of service providers. They have really good points. And my point back is, you're right. We need to do all that stuff, but we need to be able to do enforcement as well. That is not a bad thing to be able to do some enforcement. Whatever mechanism you can give me to do that enforcement, I'm very happy and grateful for that. But we need to be able to, in addition to everything else that's in place, to do some enforcement.
So I'd like to go to that issue, the enforcement tool. We've heard conflicting things about trespass. There was an interpretation in that tool that was taken away from you, and I think we've learned some more recently, so I'd like to ask the city attorney regarding her opinion on that currently. I'll just stop. You just tell me.
So what you just asked about goes to two separate issues. One goes to the enforcement of our current camping ordinance, which the chief alluded to, and the other goes to the enforceability of the trespassing ordinance. I'll turn to that one first. When the camping ordinance was first brought to light, we didn't have any reason hadn't had any cases where someone had attempted to trespass people by using a sign. And I think Assemblymember Gregory asked me this question in an assembly meeting, and at that point I couldn't give you an answer, yes or no, whether that would be successful. The reason is because under our trespassing ordinance, one of the elements of the crime to prove is that the person in charge of the property has directed someone not to be on the property. So the question was whether a sign would be determined to be, would be found to be a direction by the property owner. Since that discussion, there have been three cases arraigned in the district court where the judge has found probable cause to arraign someone on those facts, where someone had posted a trespassing sign and the court found that that was sufficient to find that the person in charge had directed no one to be on that property. So I think the trespassing piece is enforceable, and the chief and I talked about that actually today. The other piece is the enforceability of the camping ordinance on public property, which is, I think, Assemblymember Weldon just asked this question, the concept that the officers could move someone along doesn't necessarily mean that they can move someone along outside of the downtown core area. They can move someone along off of private property, but our current camping ordinance, which prohibits camping on public property and public rights of way, does have some challenges, enforcement challenges, in certain cases. When it's applied against certain individuals in certain circumstances, I don't think it's enforceable. In some cases, it is enforceable. But as a general rule, it's it suffers from some of the problems that the Ninth Circuit Court alluded to, and it's the case that everyone is talking about.
So just to recap what you said, if I understood what you said, so the current ordinance that we're discussing is about camping on private property in a certain area,
yes,
in a listed designated area. So I'm not going to speak to the deficiencies of the public camping. That is there regardless of what we do tonight on this. So this ordinance is about camping on private property, and you've now found out that putting up a sign is sufficient, has been sufficient in the three cases it has occurred, to be representative of a property owner's will. And so to me that says that the same tool that the chief had a year ago, he has again, he has today. And so the necessity to target camping in the way that, well, I'll shut up. He has the same tool he had a year ago.
Kind of. A year ago is about the time where we had the conversation about the difficulties with our current camping ordinance. There's always been the trespassing ordinance. We have not, I'm not aware of any cases where we have enforced prosecuted anyone under the trespassing ordinance based on the posting of a no trespassing sign until recently.
Mm-hmm.
That's a change. That is not what was going on a year ago. A year ago, the police were enforcing the no camping downtown, no camping anywhere on public property.
Right, but whatever deficiency that is, that's not going to be addressed tonight. That same deficiency remains whether we pass this or do not pass this. I'm talking about what impact trespass has on tonight's question.
At the last meeting, I was asked this question: what's the difference between the camping and the trespassing? And the only difference is what the officers can assume coming upon a property. Under the camping ordinance, the officers can assume that the private property owner does not want people camping there unless there is a consent sign posted. The flip side is, under the trespassing ordinance, if the officers come upon someone sleeping in a private property threshold, they have to assume that the property owner is fine with that unless there is a sign prohibiting it.
Right.
And the other big difference is the penalty.
Right. Okay. Thank you. So clarify that. Make sure we all got that.
Yeah. I think what would happen, and you can correct me doing this on the fly, is I think we would have to work proactively with the businesses if you chose to do the trespassing part of it. We as a police department would have to go out with the businesses, work proactively with them, make sure they understood where they needed those signs, how we could enforce it. It would take some time to get that implemented. I think it would be a kind of a partnership, and it would take, so that's different than what was before, but that's something that we could do.
Mr. Jones and then Ms. White.
One of my questions just got answered. The other one was, and if I get too broad in this question, you can call me on it, but as I reviewed all of the testimony, my notes from the written testimony, most of the emails, having met with a couple of the downtown business owners, talked to them about what is important to them, my question comes down to all of the ills that people complain about downtown. Emails about closing a business early for the safety of employees when it's dark. Issues of being confronted by persons that are aggressive on the streets, that are aggressive in a business that's open. And then I look at this ordinance, and it's enforceable between midnight and 7 a.m. And so, to somewhat get to Mr. Keel's question about cost, and I had asked the city manager to ask you about, you do on federal grants, sometimes state highway grants, put officers on overtime to do enforcement of DUI on holidays. It's So my question was, what would it take to have more officers on the street when business is closing, when business is opening, instead of having one officer walking for 8 or 10 hours a day and maybe getting pulled off because patrol needs that person someplace else? If we had two officers and we're paying overtime, and I guess my question is it better to look at passing an ordinance that is effective between midnight and 7 versus having an increased police presence downtown that maybe doesn't get pulled off for something else? I go to a meeting every Friday at 7 at the Prospector. I was leaving the racket club. Officer Cologne was there with another officer, and he sat there for a long time because you impounded the car and he had to wait for the tow truck. He wasn't downtown. He was behind Foodland. So balance those two between increasing the enforcement at times in which the business people have complained about that versus the midnight to 7 when you can move somebody off private property but not move them off public property.
So as a police department, we can't be a single issue police department. We got a whole bunch of things going on right now. So if I pull people off of one problem to work on another problem, the problem I pulled them off exacerbates. So we also have a huge property crime problem that I think you all know, which usually occurs in the Flats area or downtown as well, the Valley. We got lots of issues. We got issues with drugs. So anytime I pull from another place to put somewhere, there's a consequence to that. Having said that, we're making some structural changes at the police department to try to provide both a better service downtown and a more visible presence downtown, and there's two parts to that. I've talked in the past about geographic policing. I don't know how many people understand geographic policing is the concept of a beat police officer, which we have not used in Juneau in the past. We've dipped our toe into it this year. We've divided the city up into 5 geographic areas, and each patrol team has one of those areas. I think I've explained that in the past, but it's still just kind of a movement in that direction. With the downtown area, and this will go into effect starting March 5th or 6th, I can't remember which day is the Monday, there will be Sergeant Craig Campbell and 2 other police officers that are assigned to downtown as beat officers. So they won't be the same as what Officer Cologne does. But they will be permanently assigned downtown. They won't bounce around to other areas of the city. That will be their beat. They will have it. Those particular officers work 4-10 shifts, usually one of them during the daytime and 2 of them at night unless someone's on vacation. They will still be police officers, so they'll have to respond to things if we have emergencies. Again, we always have to prioritize what comes in. I cannot tell you they will always be downtown. If we have a shooting in the Valley, they're certainly going to go to it. And they will take people to jail, do all the things they do, but you will have a core set of officers that are assigned downtown, and that is their beat. So between Sergeant Campbell, the other pair of patrol officers, and the 2 already we have downtown walking beat officers, I think that will give a bigger presence in the downtown area. In addition to that, I think the initial request came in as 2 officers every day for 12 hours a day, and that was a relatively high cost, but I sense a willingness to prioritize and spend that. But that's really not something the police department would be able to handle. For 2 officers, 12 hours a day, every day a week, to cover that kind of overtime is a huge amount of overtime. Given that we're already covering the airport consistently on overtime, we're already ordering people in to cover those shifts. So 2 officers, 12 hours a day, every day of the week, isn't a check I think we can write, especially not long term. I think a more targeted approach, though, we can do. So between 20 and 30 hours a week of additional directed patrol downtown. So we would bring an officer in on overtime, assign them to downtown, say, you've got downtown, you need to work down here. I think 20 to 30 hours a week for one officer is something that we can do. Currently, we're right in the middle of our our budgeting process that we're trying to find in our current fiscal year budget. Can we carve out an extra $20,000 to cover that overtime expense between now and the 1st of July? And then I've added that line item into our budget to continue to do it for next year, and we'll see what y'all want to do with that. So I think a smaller amount of that, of what you're talking about, we would be able to do, and I think it would help to fill some of the holes we have downtown. Having said that, having a whole bunch of officers downtown won't change the thing we're talking about now. Without something to enforce, we'll have them down there watching. It will help, but it, again, doesn't get to the other part that we're talking about tonight. We really do need an enforcement tool for those officers that are there to be doing while we have them down there.
Okay, I'm going to go Ms. White, Ms. Weldon, Mr. Keel, Ms. Vladishevsky, and Mr. Jones.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And I truly mean that because having been in Juneau for many, many years, this is not a new problem, and I've never seen this community talk about the homeless issue this much. And I appreciate the chief's look at this as a holistic approach, but I come down to law, and what I see are a lot of emails that people are warning us about the constitutionality, but I'm trying to figure that out because I thought this was about private property rights. So I think I would like to hear from the city attorney on private property versus the Constitution and your thoughts on this.
So I've analyzed the cases that I can find on this issue, most notably the Ninth Circuit case that analyzed the very similar, a camping ordinance in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be the case that everyone cites to. This proposed amendment is very different. As you mentioned, it is limited to private property. No one has a constitutional right to be on someone else's private property. So that is one very significant difference between this ordinance and the ones that were at issue in the Ninth Circuit case. Additionally, the Ninth Circuit case cited with favor to other communities whose camping ordinances were limited as to geographic area, limited as to time, limited as to conduct, meaning some communities who prohibited sleeping or sitting on private property during certain times, those were found to be unconstitutional versus a prohibition on camping. And the availability of alternatives, that's another difference. Ignoring the private property versus public property piece, this amendment builds in some of the things that the Ninth Circuit case cited to as things that would have saved the Los Angeles ordinance. One of the things that would have saved the Los Angeles ordinance, besides the limitation as to geography and time and conduct, was the availability of alternatives. One of the reasons why the Los Angeles ordinance was struck down was it was being applied to people who had no alternatives. That's why it is pretty important that as you consider what it is you're going to do, if this is something that you want to do, it is important to tie it to other things. It is important to tie it to making other places available. And I just want to go back to one other piece, and I can't remember who asked it, but it is really important to understand that even if this ordinance were to pass, it would not, my advice is that without attending to and making some changes to the current existing camping ordinance, that we understand that people, if they were moved along from the private property to public property, that they not be asked to, that we not try to enforce the ordinance against them on public property because of the constitutionality issues.
So follow up. So if we were to, how much time do you think it would take to put those other pieces in place? If we were to take the city manager's advice and bump this to an effective date of April 15th, would that be enough time to get those other pieces in place?
You mean to the additional amendments?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
All Are you moving that?
Well, I would love to. If you're ready for it, I would like to change the effective date of this ordinance to April 15th, if everybody else is okay with that.
Is there objection?
Question. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I guess, Madam Attorney, we've talked about the constitutional problems of the existing ordinance, and we seem to be talking about this amendment to the existing ordinance as though it were somehow an entirely separate enactment subject to a separate judicial analysis. But once the code's amended, it's just the section of code, and the whole thing gets read together, right? Or wrong?
Yes, okay. Except for when there are pieces that are severable from the overall ordinance, and those pieces are struck down as unconstitutional, the court can read it that way. The rest of the ordinance survives. So the way that that our camping ordinance is drafted, it prohibits camping under certain scenarios. One is on any public property not signed for camping. One is on public rights of way. And then there are some others. And then this amendment would be yet another subsection of another place where camping is prohibited. So even if you were to adopt this amendment and then work on the public property piece, it would not affect the constitutionality of this piece because of the severability doctrine.
Okay, I'd like to come back to the amendment and have discussion on that before we move back to the main motion. Mr. Keel.
Thank you. So the reason that April 15th would be preferable, one more time, the opening of the Thane campground, is that correct? Is that, I'm asking if that's...
Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, in my manager's report that I read into the record on the 23rd meeting, I suggested the date of April 15th, tying it to the opening of the Thane campground. So if there's a motion to amend that date, then I think the question is to the maker of the motion on the intention.
I guess, nope. Okay. Please.
Let me, Ms. White.
Okay, my intention was twofold. That's why I asked specifically if April 15th was enough time to get some of the other pieces, because as the police chief and city manager have both said, we need to go at this with a holistic approach. This community has had a homeless problem for many, many years. This is the most effort anything has been put into that. So it kind of gives a deadline for action, because there's been a lot of talk, but it also gives us a chance to get the Thane campground open. It helps a lot get time to get to the other pieces to us. So it's all part of the holistic, because I think right now, if we were to just pass it and it went into effect in 30 days, that's not a holistic approach. And if we're trying to do this in a way that works for everybody, and believe me, my friends in the business community, I can feel your eyes burning into the side of my head right now because you want this right now, but we have to make sure that this works for the entire community. And I think adding a little bit of time to that does give us time to get the other pieces in place.
So then, if I may, Mr. Rand,
Mr. Kill.
Question to the city attorney, does it become unconstitutional again in the fall when the Thane campground closes again?
If it's
tied to the options coming into existence when the options go away.
Not this amendment that is tied to private property. So just I'll back up. 0115070 is our severability provision in code. No, it would not make the private property piece unconstitutional. It would make the public property piece, again, difficult to enforce.
So, Mr. Mayor, I will maintain my objection in part based on the need for a holistic approach and in part based on the fact that the Thane campground's going to close again when the avalanche danger goes up.
Okay. Further discussion on the amendment? Clerk will call the roll, please.
Ms. White?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mr. Gregory?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
No.
Mr. Nankervis?
Yes.
Ms. Logan?
Yes.
Mayor Kelch?
Yes.
Motion carries.
We are back to the main motion as amended. And I have Ms. Weldon, Mr. Keel, Ms. Gladyszewski.
So let's look at this a little bit different way. So let's say I'm a property owner downtown, and I don't mind homeless camping in my doorstep. They take clean up after themselves, and they're gone by the time I get to business. Would this amendment give me the ability to allow that to happen better or worse than a no trespassing sign?
They both, depending on what you want to allow, they both require the posting of a sign. So the no camping ordinance, if you want to allow and invite the campers, you post a camping allowed. And if we're in the no trespassing land and you want to prohibit people from being on your private property, you post a no trespassing sign.
But that's what I'm saying. So the no trespassing pretty much says no trespassing of any kind. Okay.
Mr. Keel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor. My previous question had gone to the unconstitutionality, and in this case, the returning unconstitutionality. I guess the discussion of holistic approach, I think, is really important. And the possibility for, we've heard public testimony about warming stations. We've had discussion in the past about the possibility of a year-round campground. I guess to the city manager, then, your time frame estimates for those pieces.
Mr. Manager.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor. So I believe there are a number of components that the assembly and the social service providers in the community could consider. As for a year-round campground, I believe if directed, we could put that in place for next winter. But I think it would take some time and some thoughtful effort on the management of that campground, and I think we want to be mindful on all campground, whether seasonal or year-round, of things like the Lane case that we just had in the Supreme Court, and how to manage a campground. As with regards to a cold weather shelter, I'm pleased to announce that there has been some progress on that, and the Salvation Army has expressed interest in using their facility for cold weather warming center, and they're looking for partner agency support as they work out the details. And again, I think if they do it, they want to be careful that they have a plan that's going to work. So I think there's some hope for cold weather shelter, but I think it's unlikely that that's going to be in place this winter, or at the very earliest, the very tail end of this winter. I think we all anticipate the Housing First opening, and we think that this is going to help 32 people in the community. Whether that's enough, I doubt it. But I think that helps address some of our issues. There have been ideas raised in the community that a high priority would be to support additional funding for either rapid rehousing or outreach team services, and the outreach team would be the people that would go out and try to connect homeless people with services. Those are both time-intensive activities. The assembly could choose to consider funding something like that in its budget cycle. And I would say that those activities would be ongoing. That would be a very labor intensive operation. And there are other ideas. We've tried to list things that the public has keyed on. In terms of long-term facility solutions, I think there are many ideas out there, like the Housing First project. There are many ideas on what a next facility move for the community could be. And I just think we have to be mindful of the time frame of the Housing First project itself. I don't know exactly how many years from when the conversation started until when the doors open, but it feels like a good 5 years or so. So many ideas, many time frames, all of them complicated.
Ms. Blaszewski and Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. While the chief's here, I want to talk about the sort of legitimate concerns for the kinds of things happening downtown. And I think sometimes we conflate those things with sleeping on the street in the nighttime, right? And so, assault, harassment, disorderly conduct, open container, all those things are currently against the law and can be, you can do something about those things. So hence I appreciate your talk about, increased presence downtown. I mean, nobody wants downtown to be given over to that behavior. And I would fully support any recommendations you had about being able to increase enforcement of those things. So are those things, can you talk about those things downtown and the difference between now and any other time? And also the issue of some people have got on us about selling certain kinds of alcohol downtown. And have you done enforcement on that? And just what you can tell me about that.
So there's a lot in there. I'll try to,
right.
If I don't get it, correct me.
Okay.
We have some real challenges that are new to us in doing a lot of this enforcement, and that gets to the root of the entire criminal justice system went through significant criminal justice reform. And so what used to be the solutions are no longer available to the community. We used to arrest, you go to jail, and that no longer is the case. We can still arrest. That's not been taken away, but the amount of time that someone's going to be in jail is significantly reduced. And so for most of these crimes you're talking about, for example, if it's a vandalism crime, if it's under $250, there doesn't carry the potential for going to jail. So even with additional officers out there, if they see someone break a window, if that's a $200 window, they're we can watch that over and over again, and we as of yet don't have the other part of it in place to deal with that. So that's a challenge we have, and we want to rise that challenge. We're actively working about how do we operate given this new environment, criminal justice reform. But so that's a new thing, and we're trying very hard to work within those new rules. So there was a fundamental shift in how we can enforce all those laws. Having said that, we can still do enforcement. We can still make arrests. We can still write. We can do everything we do before. It's just the sanctions on the back end aren't as significant. So our challenge is to figure out a way to do the enforcement that we're required to do and find the change in behavior that we're all looking for. And I don't know that anyone's come up with that perfect solution yet. It's still very much an open question how we're going to make that work.
Mr. Jones?
Well, my questions have been answered. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else want to talk on this before we vote? Mr. Gregory?
So, in general, I have some concerns about this ordinance that we're about to vote on. And I've given it quite a bit of thought, I'm sure as many of you have. And I feel that this ordinance is an impediment to the solution for a number of reasons. We've heard that, the activity has, that there are fewer people in our downtown area. We've heard that the no trespassing ordinance that we have, if you were to post a sign, would work. So it gives the police department their tool back that they had thought they had lost a year ago. I think about the funding that our community stands to lose, and this is where I feel that the ordinance is an impediment to the solution. I think about the $600,000 for phase one of the Housing First project that they had applied for, and they were within 3 points of losing that funding had this ordinance been in effect when they applied for that funding. An ordinance of this type, when they go to apply for funding in the future, will come with a penalty of 2 points. And so, you know, when you're at a margin of winning a grant by 3 points and you're, you know, you have a 2-point deficit because of an ordinance like this, we're not working towards that long-term permanent solution that we've heard about tonight. I think about St. Vincent de Paul. Annually, they get $135,000 to help folks that are homeless, to keep them in shelter, and they stand to lose that grant money should we pass this ordinance. I've been running around through downtown day and night over the last 3 to 4 weeks looking for these folks that are causing the problems, and I've seen several of them. You know, and I understand the business owners' concerns for their property. You know, but we had an incident here at City Hall on Wednesday night after the Finance Committee meeting where we had some individuals that don't have anywhere to live fighting right out by the phone booths. And Mr. Nan Curvis, myself, and another person had gone out there to stop the fight and see what we can do to help these folks. And I buzzed Mr. Nan Curvis back into the building. He didn't have his keys with him. And I proceeded to my car, parked right back here where where Ms. White is parked right now. And when I got to my car, there were six individuals standing directly in front of my car. They had a half-drank, half-gallon of what appeared to be vodka. They appeared to be slightly intoxicated, and they also had a six-pack of beer. They weren't drinking anything that I'd tell at that time, but they were certainly intoxicated, and I could tell that they were assessing me to see who I was, and you know, there was a little bit of banter, a little bit of joking going on, but I could understand if it was my sister or any one of these ladies here in the audience or anybody else here, how they might feel. But that was happening on public property, and it was happening right here behind City Hall. Didn't make me feel very safe. And this ordinance that we're looking at passing tonight will not change that feeling. I think that the increased police presence that we heard about from Chief Johnson tonight is the true answer to that. I think about all of the emails that I've received over the last month, the same emails that you've received, and it seems that 75 to 90% of them are people that do not want us to pass this ordinance, and I take that pretty seriously. I'm a property manager myself here in town, and I have properties in the valley, I have properties downtown, and you know, I'm concerned about what's going to happen to the properties that I manage, but also the properties of our constituents in surrounding neighborhoods downtown should we pass this ordinance. I'm concerned that these folks that are you know, possibly camping downtown are going to be camping in private residences. I think that's a safety issue for our community. I think that, you know, with the no trespassing option that is available to us now without any new ordinances, it cures the problem of people camping on private property without this ordinance. You know, Bartlett Regional Hospital incurred approximately $1.8 million in unpaid expenses on 32 homeless individuals in 2016. That's a very large number. And I think about how we can better use that money to create long-term solutions for the unsheltered in our community. And oftentimes these people are going to the hospital for food. They're going there for somebody to talk to. They're going there for a shower and shelter. And so I think that a much better use of those funds is to continue to work to build long-term permanent solutions for these folks, which is phase two of Housing First. But if we pass this ordinance, we put the funding for phase two at jeopardy. We haven't really talked much about the long-term solutions that, you know, many of our homeless folks have substance abuse problems. They have mental health problems, and they clearly need somewhere to live. Those are the discussions that I wish we were having tonight and that we were talking about, rather than passing an ordinance about pushing these people out of the downtown area. I'm concerned about the safety of the people that we are talking about, these homeless folks that we are going to be removing from property downtown. I think about Christy Dugukwa, who is sitting right where Chief Johnson is right now, and seeing her beat up. This is somebody that I have known since she was a little girl, and I am deeply saddened to see her in this state, that she was homeless, that she was beat up. You know, her husband, Derek Totemoff, you know, same story, just a nice guy. You know, they're down on their luck, and they need some help. This isn't going to help them. It's not going to help her safety. I think about, you know, Mary Bailey, who we heard from the other night, and I think about her safety as well. And that's something that she expressed to us, is that, you know, when she is staying in these areas of private property, it's because she's concerned about her safety. I was running 2 weeks ago, and I was downtown, and I came across a man who had an interaction with our local police department, and, you know, they had approached him because somebody had said that somebody matching his description was rifling through vehicles, and I observed, and they handled the matter very professionally, but I wanted to talk to him a little bit afterwards, so I stuck around and spent some time talking to him, and I noticed that he was beat up, and I asked him, you know, what happened, and he said that he had been sleeping, he got beat up, and ended up with a concussion where he ended up in Bartlett Regional Hospital for, or he ended up in a coma for 3 days at Bartlett Regional Hospital, and he was in pretty bad shape. And so I worry about his safety as well. You know, I think about the groups of people that are intimidating people in our parking lots, and, you know, when I first got on the assembly, I had a gal that was talking to me that she went up to the new parking garage, and she was on the top floor, and there was a group of people up there, and they were intimidating her, and she noticed that they were drumming on the concrete wall with windshield wipers, and she thought, boy, that's really bizarre. She got to her car, and she realized that they were her windshield wipers, you know, and so it's a safety issue for her, but this camping ordinance doesn't fix that. It's the increased police presence that will help to fix that part of the problem. You know, my biggest concern is that this very ordinance of moving people out of the downtown area is going to affect the long-term solution of hundreds of thousands of dollars of funding for phase two of Housing First, hundreds of thousands of dollars for St. Vincent de Paul, which helps the unsheltered currently. And I have to ask myself, where is that money going to come from if we pass an ordinance that's going to affect their funding? And I don't have an answer for that. I really don't. But I also think about people like Cynthia Dow, who we've heard from. She's been quite vocal. Last weekend, I was down at the transportation center because I was at court, and one of the judges up there had sent somebody who was in court and said, you know, you don't have anywhere to go, go down to the transportation center. We had heard about Cynthia Dow talking about people going down there. So I decided that I would go and check it out and see what's going on at the transportation center. I went in there, and there were a group of homeless folks that were there. Shortly after I'd arrived, Cynthia Dow arrived with a pot of chili and sandwiches for these folks, and she knew their names, just like she told us she did. They were pretty open to her presence, and they were nice people. They just needed somewhere to live. And so, you know, that's the type of approach that I think that we should be taking here at the Assembly, is to try to help these folks, not push them out of a particular area, and to work towards long-term solutions. And if we pass this ordinance, we're not working towards a long-term solution. It's a short-term solution. And that's why I plan to vote no on this ordinance tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Gregory. Ms. White?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My concerns about the HUD funding were answered with a simple conversation that you had with our legislative delegation. But to me, this is pushing the problem onto the private property owners in our community. There has been, in some cases, there's one person in this room that's had tens of thousands of dollars of damage to their building because somebody decided to unplug their heat tape and plug in a heater and blow the fuse. We have another person in the room who, when they tried to get somebody to removed from in front of their building, thank goodness they called JPD. The person came out from under their blanket with a hammer in one hand and a knife in the other. This is about the private property rights of the people who own the property. This isn't about the people on the sidewalk. This isn't about people in Marine Park. This is about people who have invested in our downtown community, who employ our neighbors. And we have young women going to work afraid of what they're going to encounter when they get there. So I don't, once again, the police chief and the city manager have made it clear that this is one piece of the puzzle. And I have to have some faith in what these people tell me. I have Department of Law telling me she's working on multiple things. I have the city manager and assistant manager telling me they're working on multiple things. And the police chief has multiple things. And while this may in some ways sound like it's cruel, it's not, because it gives them a tool to try to get these people to services, which is ultimately our goal. Nobody should be sleeping outside. Nobody wants our neighbors sleeping outside. Nobody wants people to go hungry or people to suffer. But that doesn't mean that the entire burden needs to be borne by the business segment of our community. So I will continue to support this ordinance, and I will have faith in the people that have told me that there are so many other facets to this problem that it's part of a package, and we just can't bring the whole package at once. Nobody will understand it if we bring it all at once. I will continue to support this ordinance. Thank you.
Ms. Fogel.
So no matter whether we support this or against this ordinance, and it excuse me, it's really not the ordinance that we're against, it's the amendment, and we have to kind of remember that at some time. This ordinance has been in play for a long time. But we do have to applaud the mayor for bringing this to the forefront of the community. You've done more in your short term with this amendment than has been said for the homeless for quite some time. With that being said, I really want to support this ordinance because the concerns of the business community are real, and they have had the brunt of this issue for a long time when it should have been a community problem. On the other hand, you really want to oppose this ordinance because the concerns raised by the advocates for the homeless people are also real, and we have to respond to their concerns. And I want to thank everybody for all their emails and phone conversations, and I've tried to answer all the emails, but I know I haven't answered all of them all. We've just been inundated with emails, but it just shows what a big concern this is to the community. So whether it's yes or no, this isn't the end of the conversation. As the city manager said, we still need to work with the Salvation Army for a cold weather housing solution. We still need to work with the Glory Hole to figure out how to clean up the streets. We need to still work on the winter campground. We are hoping Housing First helps this problem tremendously. And we need to work on rapid rehousing or an outreach team. I'm part of Shepherd of the Valley, and many people know that that's working on Family Promise, and that's starting March 1st. They'll start taking in families. So in the end, I have to decide, and I'm sorry, a little emotional, which way to vote to keep the homeless issue at the forefront. And hearing the staff today cemented my decision. I really didn't make the decision until this time, but I think it's to support the ordinance because I think the ordinance is going to be a thorn in everybody's side, and it will keep the homeless issue to the forefront, and that's going to be my decision.
Ms. Wadaszewski.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Since this started, we've received over 200 emails, 220. I'm a spreadsheet nerd. I made a spreadsheet. And, it was really amazing to read. I mean, the majority of them were homemade, homegrown, well-considered comments. There were some that were as part of a campaign, but it was really amazing. I have not seen that sort of outpouring so fast, so passionate and thoughtful in a short period of time. I mean, it's clear that this has brought out thoughtful, well-considered, compassionate people on both sides. I don't think certainly one side or the other doesn't have a corner on compassion. And the overwhelming majority asked the assembly to craft a thoughtful solution and to think about what they were doing. The business community is at the end of their rope downtown. Most of those businesses have been there for a long time, have dealt with people, these homeless people, people who don't have a place to live for a long time. And it just got so bad that they're at the end of their compassion and patience. It doesn't mean that they're not compassionate. And it's absolutely true that they should not bear the brunt of this issue. It's a community issue. It belongs on the back of all of us, not on the back of 20 businesses downtown. So there's really broad agreement on all of that. I mean, the only disagreement is whether or not you think these particular words are actually going to help or they're not going to help. It's just, is the no camping going to help or not? I come down on it doesn't really address the issue. If the issue downtown is people being unneighborly, assaulting people, we should enforce the current laws that we have, not target people who are vulnerable. I, too, have gone out in the last few weeks, three Sundays at 6 in the morning to talk and see who's out there, who's sleeping on the street. And, I saw some of the same people, well, many of the same people each time, and talked to them and, why are you sleeping on the street? There's the glory hole. There's places to go. They all have, as people who work with this issue know, different stories and complicated different stories. The idea that a move-along ticket is going to get them to say, gee, this is going to push me over the edge and I'm going to go and get some services. I met a couple that's sleeping on the street. They just had a baby 4 months ago, and they are highly motivated to get off the street. You can't be more highly motivated than just having a baby. And yet, for complicated reasons, they're still sleeping on the street. And they got moved from one place. They had been camped in a certain place for several weeks. We saw them in a different place this last Sunday. They were told to move from where they were, and they said, gosh, we moved right along, and I don't know why they told us to move. We're always very careful and clean up after ourselves. So they just moved to a different place and they hope not to get moved out of there. I mean, clearly they're trying to get into a place. They have they're highly motivated to do that, and for a series of complicated reasons, they haven't been able to do that. I spent a lot of time at the Project Homeless Connect. I'm not a homelessness expert. I applaud the business community and the mayor for bringing this up, but we are just starting the conversation, and I know that people downtown they've long lost their patience for talking about it. They want something to happen. Now that we understand that the trespass can happen, you put up a sign that says no trespassing, you should be able to keep people off of your property if you want that. I too am concerned about the funding. I mean, the St. Vincent de Paul, we got a letter from them. They get a lot of money, and they're concerned about the points that they'll lose if we pass this. Nothing certain. But really, Beth and I come at this similarly. Which option will keep this on the burner? Will the option of passing and keep it on the front burner or not passing and keep it on the front burner? I happen to come down on a different side of that. I think that it is a good start to talk about it, but that it's it is not the solution. It's the it moves people who are simply sleeping on the street, and they're not necessarily doing criminal things. And it's not the same, necessarily the same population. So anyway, I'm going to be voting against this. What I really want us to do is make sure we stay on this. Right after the last assembly meeting, we were able to get a porta potty up down by Marine Park. If you don't know, there's one there. I mean, people should have a place to go to the bathroom all night long. And it should be run by the city. The city, that's a community problem. And I, again, really heartened by the, 160 people wrote to oppose this, 25 wrote to support it. Some of those groups had groups of people, like the chamber, and so they represent more people than 25. But we had a lot of conversation on this, and there's a lot of people willing to work on it, and I hope no matter which way this goes that we continue to try to work this out and do what's best for everybody in our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fletch. Mr. Jones?
Thank you. I've appreciated the last four comments. And I don't want to take up a lot of time, but my past haunts me a little bit here. In 73 and 74, I was still in college and studying to work in the field of alcohol and drugs. I spent a lot of time in Spokane, Washington, when the federal law was changing so that public intoxication was no longer a crime. Spokane was getting ready to hold the World's Fair in 74. So they got an exemption. And on the one hand, many of us were working to get people into services. And on the other hand, the judges and the police department were trying to move everybody out of the downtown where the World Fair was going to be so that the tourists weren't bothered by them. They pushed them into the neighborhoods. They pushed them, way under the bridges. They pushed them in a lot of places. So I'm sort of big fan of Juneau's Police Department, but I'm haunted by that thought. My fear is the same as a couple other speakers, that if we pass this ordinance, we'll go, okay, we've done that, and then we'll get into the budget cycle, and we won't want to pass money because we have a budget deficit. My other fear is if we don't pass this, maybe we'd be in a lot of pressure to spend a lot more money than maybe we have to. But and I've sat up here and listened to debates on various ordinances, and I won't bring them up. But oftentimes it comes down to, well, we really can't enforce that. Yes, it's on the books, but it's a low priority. If we have a shooting, if we have a domestic violence, if we have a car wreck, we won't enforce that at that time, even though we know it's sort of against the law. And I just see this as another ordinance that will be enforceable for a very brief period of time. We'll take a priority for a brief period of time, and we'll all just sort of drop it. When I came to Juneau in 1975, I came as an alcohol counselor in the city program. I spent a lot of time back here in Wino Alley before it was boarded up, so you couldn't walk through that. I spent a lot of time walking these streets in those days. Luckily, I haven't had to do that lately, although I have, like others, have gone out at various times to try to see what is happening, and I haven't been as successful as the rest. A couple of times when I've driven through town at 3 or 4 in the morning, I haven't seen that many people. I understand from the email we got from the police chief that, there were 10 or 12 out. He's got pictures. A couple of times I've been through, I haven't seen them. I've seen one or two, but I haven't seen the 10 or 12. So I guess I'm just haunted by the fear that we are going to be inactive. I'm going to pay particular attention to the budget for the police department because I think that's important. The fire department gets involved with the health calls and you know, issues at the hospital and rainforest recovery. And I understand that the hospital can talk about spending $1.3 million on 35 people. But it shows up as a bad debt. So if you eliminate that, it shortens their bad debt. It's not cash that can be used in other services. So we need to stay away from that as a solution. If we keep them out of the hospital, we suddenly have $1.3 million we can use someplace else. It just reduces the hospital's bad debt for a variety of other reasons. So I came in here and as torn as Ms. Weldon. I'm going to come down on the other side, I think, of her and not support this ordinance. But I really wished I could have found better reasons to support it. And I will. If we can't fund the services that we think need to be out there, if we can't find the solution to a winter campground, if we can't find the solution to a warming station, if we can't find the solution to put an increased police presence, whether it's overtime or we authorize them for a couple of more officers so they can do more recruiting, and we are willing to pay for that. And maybe I'll be more supportive of some of these things, but I just have this fear that we will not be as serious about this issue if we pass this ordinance. So I'm probably a no vote. Thank you.
Mr. Keel?
I think Ms. Becker had her hand.
Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I've heard so many things that all make sense and some don't. There's so many things I could say. I don't believe that's true, or I don't go along with that, or how could you think that? But the truth of the matter is, we don't pick on this thing or that thing. My feeling is, we have administration over here who've said they're going to do these things. You have an assembly who cares a lot about what's happening, and we have a public. It's not going to let us get by with the things that you're predicting could happen. I think that our manager has plans. He's already told us what he wants to do. We're appreciating what he wants to do. We've said we want that. I think the assembly is very, very committed to finding a solution to this problem. And I think we have a public, whether it's the downtown business people or the people who are supporting the homeless thinking that we're being cruel, who care a lot about what's happening. And I'm trusting that we're going to do what's right, because I really think that's just generally our way of working. And I will be supporting this because I trust that we're going to. And if we don't, I think we're going to hear about it from all aspects, including from ourselves. So
thank you, Ms. Becker. Mr. Keel. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was a little reluctant to speak. I'm not sure I can do any better than Mr. Gregory did. But I hope I can convince somebody to change their mind. I think that Mr. Gregory was very right when he said this makes the problem worse, not better. I may be putting words in his mouth. I don't think he phrased it that way, but I will. I have in my time on the assembly gotten to know the work that JPD does better than I thought I would, and I just have nothing but admiration. And you've heard me talk at this table before about my admiration for the way they carry out their duties. I just can't agree that this is a public safety measure. I cannot see it that way. We heard the chief talk about checking on people in doorways and checking on who they are, and the words ring in my ears. They didn't have warrants. The folks I have spoken to in the wee hours and at 6 a.m. Aren't in doorways because they're high-functioning folks. And they aren't in doorways because they're lying in wait. They're in doorways because they're the most brightly lit places, and they're terrified that they're going to get robbed or raped or beaten. Probably not every one of them. I'm sure there's an exception. But it's crummy to sleep in really bright lights. It stinks. It's crummy to sleep on the street. You don't pick that spot where you know somebody's gonna come get you out of there before you've slept your fill. You don't choose that spot for kicks. You choose that spot because it's the safest you can be if you're not functional enough to be in the glory hole or St. Vincent's shelter or other shelter. And so I hope that no one will take disagreement as criticism, that the mission to help people in Juneau live without fear, Chief, when you asked, are people better off now in doorways, you bet they are. Because those abandoned mine buildings up above Gastineau Avenue are scary places. And there are no lights. And JP doesn't drive by and check. So if this were a public safety measure, it wouldn't just apply to this area of town, and this wouldn't be the approach. That said, the homeless problem is concentrated downtown, and it's not fair to people who own property and run businesses downtown. It's not fair. It's never been fair. People who own property and run businesses and live downtown where this problem is more concentrated are shouldering an unfair share of the burden. I worked out of a downtown storefront some years back, and coming in to open up at 7-something or 8-something and having to clean up that had a recessed doorway was horrifying and disgusting, and nobody should have to go through it. So we've talked about other approaches. We've talked about approaches that will help. I asked the Glory Hole to come up with the plan to hire their patrons, and they've submitted to the city manager to hire their patrons every morning instead of every couple of weeks. And let's take some of this burden off these people who are shouldering an unfair share of it. But it's not a public safety thing. When we looked at this at Committee of the Whole, we looked at some crime statistics, and we compared the downtown business district to another business area. There were more crimes downtown. So I asked for some statistics on those, and I live downtown. I work downtown. They worried me because crime's up. And in the last couple of years, I just comparing 2013 to 2016, so four full years, 2013, 2014, 2015, 2016. In all the categories the chief showed us at Committee of the Whole, all but one, crime in the nighttime is up. It's up by 3 and 5, and in one case, 15%. Crime in the daytime is up 50 to 100%. People don't sleep in doorways in the daytime. It's not when they sleep in doorways. So we, I think, owe the merchants and the business owners and the property owners and the residents and the patrons downtown more police work, more police resources during the daytime. And I was thrilled to hear that that some progress has already been made toward that so that people feel safe, because everybody deserves to feel safe. But this takes us backwards. With less resources in our community to get the homeless into housing. You know, Ms. Weldon, my congregation is joining yours in Family Promise. I think we're going to make a difference for some folks. But Catherine Duncan, who I was surprised to see here tonight, who talked to us, I feel like a real jerk. Catherine Duncan interned in my office a few years ago through a job skills program, and I didn't know she was homeless until tonight. So I'm not interested in making the I'm not interested in making the problem worse. So I hope that we keep the focus on things that will help, not things that take us backwards.
Thank you, Mr. Peel. Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, I don't need to say a whole lot because everybody else has said plenty, and much of it I agree with. We've had a lot of testimony, a lot of correspondence, as folks have alluded to, and that's very much appreciated to get it, because almost 100% of it has been done with good intent and done in good spirit and not nasty about it, which is always appreciative for me to get that sort of stuff. I had a whole bunch of things I wanted to talk about regarding the testimony and correspondence, but I don't want to get into that now because I think we've been at this a little while ago. Now, the most recent homeless count came out, and I believe it was 224, of which this ordinance would really address the 10 to 20 people that are consistently trespassing where this ordinance affects. This ordinance more narrowly defines an already existing ordinance. The city attorney spoke to this. She spoke to the constitutionality of it and how it would be harder to defend the portions that we aren't amending tonight. And I believe that this amendment is more charitable than what we currently have on the books, which is criminal trespass, which is a crime. Mm-hmm. This ordinance would be an infraction, not a crime. I believe that's far more charitable than a criminal fine that goes along with this. We've heard about Fed money tonight, Fed grant money that comes with this. I want to tie that to the city attorney's comments about constitutionality. Those Fed grants were obtained with the ordinance that is currently on the books, that Ms. Mead commented on, is less defendable than what we are going to be doing or what we're talking about tonight. And at the worst, it can't be any worse than it was before. I would argue that it's better, that we have a better opportunity to do that now, from one aspect, that it's more defendable, and also that we are moving away from doing the criminal trespass, the criminal action to do this. I think that's the way to go. I think that Mr. Watt summed it up very good in his second paragraph, which I will refer to. I recommend that you consider this ordinance in the context of other services and management measures that are already being provided or are being considered for a homeless population. This ordinance is one small piece of a larger puzzle. To be effective, it must be accompanied by other measures, and he's spoken to some of those measures. Absent the other measures, this ordinance would likely only serve to move the problem along, and I could not agree with that more. I think this is one tool in the toolbox, and it's a private property rights issue. That's what it is. It's a private property rights issue. And we are trying to reinforce, at least in my mind, that I believe people have private property rights. And just because you're homeless doesn't supersede somebody else's private property rights. And if on the off chance that it might, affect our ability to get Fed grant money. If the ability to get that grant money is tied to diminishing our citizens' private property rights, I don't want that money. Thank you.
Does anybody want to make any comments before I summarize? After my thoughts, then we'll take the vote, and then we'll have a 10-minute break. The pathway to the vote tonight began the 1st of December. Began with a group of downtown business families coming into the mayor's office with concerns of safety for themselves and for their employees and their businesses, and frustration with the daily litter, graffiti, and damage to the property. Many of the families downtown I have known since I arrived here 50 years ago. The first meeting verified the parameters and the depth of a very serious situation. In the first brainstorming session and a second one 2 weeks later, we discussed how to address the safety for downtown business families and their employees and damaged private property in the downtown corridor. We talked about the options for those in the doorways who will not or cannot use the almost 80 to 100 emergency beds available nightly. And we focused on the need for warming centers as weather conditions worsen. As a former high school teacher, I learned several lessons as this ordinance worked its way through the legislative process. I learned government works slower than I thought, and issues take unexpected twists and turns. I learned that sometimes the policy and regulations already on the books prevent you from dealing with immediate needs. I learned that media plays a large role in shaping the parameters of the questions. But passion and involvement were evident through the meetings and the forums and through testimony, both written and oral. And that's a healthy sign of democracy. I support this ordinance because no camping on private property is less onerous than no trespassing ordinance on the books. No camping does not require the property owner to be present for the law to be enforced, and we heard a little bit different on that. Violating the no trespassing is a criminal arrestable violation. Violating the no camping is an infraction. I support the ordinance because of my observation of towns in the Midwest where I grew up. Many of those towns have blocks of empty boarded up buildings with broken glass and graffiti. The downtowns are dead. Let's not allow that to happen here. Putting up metal gates and kennel fencing with no trespassing signs is not the least bit inviting. Juneau does not need any more business in the downtown core choosing to open only seasonally or close permanently. We need to reverse that direction. I have listened to the argument that we may lose points on federal grant applications if we enact this ordinance. I have spoken with our local liaison to our federal congressional delegation, to our federal lobbyists who are not aware of penalties, but who will monitor the situation. I ask for the no camping ordinance be drafted and introduced for action. I accept full responsibility. I intend to vote for it. It speaks to a core value of mine regarding respect for property of others. Another core value is to whomever much is given, much is expected. There will be much to work on, such as warming centers, sleep-off facilities, housing, and camping sites if this passes and takes effect April 15th. We need to continue with forward motion. At the end of the vote, we will take a 10-minute break. I would request that you respect the process. Do not applaud, cheer, respect the feelings of all the people here tonight, regardless of the vote outcome. Will the clerk please call the roll? And this will be on ordinance 2016-44 as amended.
Mr. Nankervis?
Yes.
Ms. Weldon?
Yes.
Ms. White?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
No.
Mr. Gregory?
No.
Mr. Jones?
No.
Mr. Keel?
No.
Mayor Kelch?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay, we'll take a 10-minute break.
Sad night.
Support comes from Foodland Pharmacy, located in downtown Juneau, and Ron's Apothecary at the Mendenhall Mall. Both pharmacies are locally owned and operated and provide prescription needs, medication information, and nutritional supplements. Foodland Pharmacy and Ron's Apothecary, proud sponsors of Public Radio in Juneau.
Support comes from GCI Internet Services. GCI offers internet packages that include technical support 365 days a year. GCI, serving Juneau downtown on Seward Street and in the valley.
Listen every morning on KTOO Juneau 104.3.
And you're tuned to KTOO Juneau 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. And we're currently listening to the live broadcast of the CBJ Assembly meeting. They are currently on a short break. The weather for tonight is rain, low around 44, east wind around 30 miles per hour with gusts as high as 50 miles per hour. Tomorrow, rain, high near 45. Thank you.
What does your sweetheart want for Valentine's Day? I bet you'll find it at the Sea Alaska Heritage Store. One-of-a-kind, handcrafted copper, silver, and ivory bracelets, earrings, and rings made by Alaska Native artists. Choose something special for your someone special. And while you're there, you can pick up gold medal tickets. Your purchases support Alaska Native language, art, and cultural programs. Shop the Sea Alaska Heritage Store in downtown Juneau's Walter Soboloff Building on the corner of Seward and French Street. Open Tuesday through Friday, 10 to 6, Saturday, 10 to 5. Happy Valentine's Day! All are welcome to Juneau Peace and Pizza, a gathering of your Juneau neighbors to celebrate 15 years of nonviolent peacemaking by Veterans for Peace, Juneau Chapter. Enjoy free pizza, great live music, and an open mic. This is a chance to connect with friends and strangers to celebrate the peace within each of us, to have conversations with those who think differently, and most importantly, to have fun together. It's a time we build bridges. Sunday, February 19th from 1 to 5 p.m. at the Jack. More information at 586-6738. This message brought to you by Veterans for Peace.
Move on to new business. Proposed property. I guess we won't need to have the clerk read this because she's just going to say foreclosed property. So, Mr. Manager.
In December 2016, the city finalized the property tax foreclosure of property located at 15860 Glacier Highway, located between Glacier Highway and Point Louisa Road. The property consists of a single-family residence located on approximately 63,000 square foot lot. It is currently assessed at just over $391,000. Once property is foreclosed upon and the redemption period provided for by law expires, the foreclosing municipality must decide whether the property should be retained for a public purpose or sold. We ask that the Assembly direct the attorney to prepare an ordinance providing for sale of the property. Alternately, the Assembly may direct the attorney to prepare an ordinance providing the property be retained for public purpose. I recommend that the Assembly direct the attorney to draft an ordinance providing for the sale of the property.
Is there any public comment? Seeing none, Mr. Nankervis. Mr. Nankervis.
Well, for the purpose of discussion, I will move that the Assembly directs the city manager to have the attorney draft an ordinance providing for the sale of property. And I won't ask for unanimous consent because I think we have some discussion.
Question. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So in the past, we have found foreclosed properties oftentimes to be ideal for the Juneau Housing Trust and the high school home build project. Is this property suitable? Would the lot accept additional housing units if that were a direction that we chose to go?
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I think not in answer to Assembly Member Keel's question. I think what I know of the property, it's a single-family home on a large lot in a single-family neighborhood, and I think that's its highest and best use in that current state. I don't think it's appropriate for additional development of the kind in particular that the house build program does.
Mr. Jones and Mr. Purvis.
Since I know that the foreclosure process is lengthy, and so this was in December, you finalized this. So a little bit of history. How did we end up with the property? Given that I know it's probably a potentially 2-year process, what's the shape of the property? Has the city been taking care of it, been paying the electric bills, whatever, or is it somebody been living there? Is there, I just want some history behind this.
Mr. Mayor, there has been a long story with this property. I don't know all the details. We have a lien for nearly $16,000 in property tax, includes taxes from 2014 and 2015. The property, we believe right now, is possibly occupied by people
that may not have a right to be living there. We believe that at some times the power may have been on. From the exterior of the property, the buildings appear to be in serviceable condition. We don't think they've fallen into disrepair. We've not inspected the inside of the property, to the best of my knowledge. I believe there have been a substantial number of times that our tax collection office has contacted or attempted to contact the property owner over several years, and there has been a lengthy lead up to tonight's item on the agenda.
Mr. Jones?
So so we own the property today? I mean, the CBJ owns the property. And we haven't inspected it. We haven't looked at it. You're going to put it up for sale. Occupied and sight unseen, or is there a process yet to that will be put in place if we pass, if the ordinance comes before us? Does it go to the lands department for their processing and put up for sale? And what's the end result of the ordinance?
So I'll take that one. One, just to give you a little bit of background, the way the foreclosure process works is after the property is foreclosed and title by law transfers to the municipality, the property owner, the prior property owner, has the right to occupy the property during the what's called the redemption period. So the CBJ would have no right to possess the property during the redemption period, which lasts for 1 year after the judgment, the foreclosure judgment is obtained. So foreclosure judgment obtained from the court, we wait 1 year. There is a redemption process, a lot of public notice that has to happen. At the end of the redemption period, we submit a request for what's called a clerk's deed from the clerk of court, and that's what actually gives us title to the property. And I think that did not happen too long ago. Now is the time where by statute we have to determine whether to keep the property for a public purpose or sell the property. And if the property is sold, it can be by any method that we normally use for such purposes. I think the method that is being envisioned to be part of the ordinance would be by an auction sale.
Yeah, are there any further questions? Mr. Van Kerpus.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I wanted to ask a variation on Mr. Jones' question. Do we need to do anything with this property before we sell it?
Legally, no. No.
I'm basing this on other properties we foreclosed on and had issues with, so. No? Okay.
Further questions? Ms. White.
When is our year up? I was just trying to look at the recordings and stuff that assessor's database still shows it in the previous owner's name, and I don't see anything in 2017, so I'm just trying to figure out where we're at in the process.
We're done with the redemption period.
It's been the year. Okay.
Yeah, we have the clerk's deed.
By March 2nd, looks like. Okay, I am looking at the right thing. Okay, thank you.
And one other thing that I'll just say, I don't know if this is important, but the way the auction sale works is it's sold at auction, and the city retains its administrative costs, the property tax, and the remainder of the sale price goes to the prior property owner.
Okay. Mr. Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess what bothers me is we just spent a lot of time talking about camping and trespass, and manager reports that there may or may not be people living in property we currently own that he's recommending we put up for sale. I have no objections to it going up for sale. In fact, it probably should, whether it goes an outcry auction or whatever. But to sort of not know the condition of it and to not know whether people are living there illegally, what condition the property's in, hopefully by the time we deal with this ordinance, we'll have some better answers. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Keel?
Just, I may be looking at the wrong spot. I thought this was a D3 area.
A what?
A D3 area.
Yeah, it's on D3, but it's a steep incline.
Lot over an acre. So, I mean, I guess I don't know that. I would be more comfortable if we reached out to the high school home build program to see whether this is a lot that would be acceptable or useful to them. They have built on one further out than this. So that would certainly be, I'd be interested in an answer to that. And if it's not suitable, then certainly an auction sale makes sense to me.
Do you wish to amend the motion?
I guess it seems to me it would be worth holding off to get an answer to that. If we're interested in providing it to the high school home build program, that's an entirely different thing. It's not an amendment to the ordinance. Rather than disposal by auction, it would be a declaration of public purpose. I guess the attorney could let me know whether it's possible to run down both roads efficiently.
So we have done one foreclosure process with a property that has gone to the Juneau Home Build Program in the past, and that I can recall, and that property had a dilapidated building that needed to be demolished, and that was built into the cost. I would have to take a look at the statute to figure out what our obligation would be to the prior property owner as far as compensating the prior property owner, whether or not or if we declare this a public purpose, whether or not we would have to then pay the prior property owner fair market value before we dispose of it. Because it is a disposal, the way that we have been selling property to Juneau Housing Trust, we give the property for less than fair market value, but then they sell it for what fair market value that helps to support their mission.
They never sell a property, though. They construct a structure and...
And they've been leasing the property for 99 years and selling the structures. So I'd have to look at that. I would be very careful because the prior property owner does have some rights. But I can look at that.
Thank you.
Okay. Further questions, discussion? Madam Clerk, will you please read the motion?
To direct the city manager to have the attorney draft an ordinance for the sale of the property.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, I won't object to moving forward if the answer is that it comes back later that it would be suitable. I can address that with the assembly at that time. So I don't have an objection tonight.
All right. Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, the motion carried. Staff reports.
Mr. Mayor, I have one staff report. We have an employee who has worked for the borough for a little over 20 years of dedicated service. Which is a really long time. Ms. Sika, our municipal clerk, a milestone in her career. She's worked in different parts of the city. Of course, you know her as your unfailingly loyal and reliable clerk. And she does many things for you, the assembly, staff, and public, not least of which she supervises the running of our elections, the underpinning of our democratic system. It's really, really nice to be a city manager when you have rock-solid employees with great longevity, grace,
and institutional knowledge. So it is truly a happy moment for me to give this certificate of appreciation to Laura Steele.
Thank you.
Aww.
Start with gray hair.
We did that.
That way.
Did you get all his verbiage down? Congratulations, Mark.
Thank you.
Any further staff reports, Mr. Manager?
No, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
I like that. Mayor's report. Today, got a whole bunch of Valentines from some preschool kids.
Oh.
Hearts and their preschool teachers with a thank you for the assembly for supporting the Heart program. This Friday, there will be 100 years of the Red Cross in Alaska. And it will be celebrated Friday at the Elizabeth Radovich Hall, starting at 6 p.m. and followed by a dinner and dancing. So it would be great if as many of you could attend as possible. And we sent out the assembly goals in the 2,912 emails that you received in the past week. This was included. And so far I've not heard back from anyone that had any heartburn with what was we had requested staff to take our priorities and put actionable goals with them. We don't hear anything back, let's say by Thursday, we will go ahead and use those for our actionable goals. And that concludes the mayor report. Committee and liaison reports. Start on this end and work down that way. Mr. Dan Curtis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Committee of the Whole met January 30th, where we had a joint meeting with the Planning Commission. Our topics included planning priorities, Title 49 updates, and land access. We also met again on February 6th at a joint session with the Docks and Harbor Board. We discussed their projects at length. We also talked about their planning efforts, their ops and regulations, the lightering dock downtown, and lastly, we had a joint discussion with the Chancellor from UAS regarding the Auk Bay Marine Station. Our next meeting is scheduled for February 27th, where we will be speaking with Eagle Crest and the Juneau School District Board of Education. And also, I have been approached by staff that it would behoove us to have another unscheduled, as yet unscheduled, Committee of the Whole meeting for Monday, March 13th, to address some more topics since we have a bunch of stuff piling up. So I give you that heads up. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
You're welcome. Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Public Works, basically the main thing that we did at Public Works is we had a report about the alternative route, emergency route going up to the hospital. And that is a project that Mr. Healy's working on. It'll come back to Public Works, and it's just something that we thought would be a safety measure, so that's what we're looking into. The joint facilities meeting with the assembly group and the school district is going to meet March 1st at noon. It's not tomorrow, it's March 1st at noon here in this chamber. The Alaska Committee met, and one thing that was sad but happened is Mal Menzi had to resign, and so the nominating committee will be asking people to volunteer to be on the Alaska Committee. The Alaska Committee gave a vote of support for the University of Alaska School of Education and for the camping ordinance. The Southeast Conference mid-session will be March 14 and 15. The officers of the Alaska Committee are Wayne Jensen, President, Rosemary Hagvig, Vice President, Mac Mertz, Treasurer, and Wynn Greening, Secretary, and those are repeat from what they were last year. The docks and harbors, I think Mr. Nankervis already told you about our joint meeting with the university. We had actually two meetings, and at the last one, we did hear that the university is interested in working with us to try to come up with a way of working out that NOAA project and see if we can work together on it, which would be a win-win for both of us. And let's see, I think that's, the chamber, this Friday, President Johnson from the University of Alaska will be the speaker. And if you want to, Thursday. I don't know why I went Friday. Thursday, President Johnson will be the speaker. And if you would like to go to that, you have to call in and reserve your name with the Secretary of the Chamber. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Becker. And Mr. Keel, when you give your committee and liaison reports, I think you're the last presiding officer. So you
hit the whole kit and caboodle. I will do my best, Mr. Mayor. Thank you. The Finance Committee last met Wednesday, February 8th. We got a report from the auditors, our contract auditors, on FY16, a clean audit report, and we discussed some of their recommendations. We also heard a dry and technical change in how the Finance Department will report the fund balance available for our enterprise funds. And got an initial look at the finance director's projections for city revenues and budget for FY18 through 20, and talked with him a little bit about refining those projections and bringing us multiple scenarios at our next finance committee meeting. We reviewed a schedule of how the manager allocated $500,000 in cuts in the current fiscal year, brought on as part of our response to the governor's school debt reimbursement and other vetoes that impacted the city budget once the budget was already adopted, and got a the initial look at the city manager's recommendations for the marine passenger fees. Those recommendations are out for public comment now. So anybody interested should take a look at the CBJ website if they want to comment on those. And the other last thing Finance did was discuss the schedule. We'll be taking up proposals for the renewal of the 1% project tax to ask the voters about reauthorizing that once we've wrapped up our operating budget for FY18. So just one little thing before that. Let's see. Moving on to liaison reports, the Municipal League's Winter Conference is this coming week, right? The 22nd and 23rd here in town. You've gotten a number of emails from the clerk about signing up and about participation. The Municipal League is busily working with and sometimes on the legislature for the issues that are important to municipalities, which largely have to do with protecting community assistance, avoiding unfunded mandates, and empowering municipalities to take on more local have stronger and better local control. The campus council last met on Monday the 6th and heard a number of updates on the investments the university is making and some of the challenges they're facing. UAS won a competitive process statewide within the university system for some strategic investment funds for marketing, both online and social media marketing, to try and boost enrollment numbers and student participation, which is good because the enrollments are down just about 5% from the prior year. We saw that this fall. It's carried through till spring, so they're working on that. They are also working very hard on proposals for the strategic pathways process that we've all heard so much about lately, to build a joint fisheries program with the University of Alaska Fairbanks, where the bachelor's degrees would be here and the PhDs would come from them. I can't remember who would do the master's in fisheries, but a partnership approach seems to be the best technique going forward. So they may at some point come and look for a resolution of support for that. We may also all hear, just as a heads up, in the coming weeks, the Federal Department of Education Office of Civil Rights has been doing a statewide Title IX audit about how more than 200 universities around the nation have responded to reports of sexual harassment, sexual assault on campus. All of the University of Alaska campuses are included there. The chancellor felt that the University of Alaska Southeast made a lot of important improvements to their process, brought to light by that audit. Let's see. Municipal League Campus Council. Okay. Presiding Officer reports. Those members of the Assembly, the seven of us who participated in the Southeast Alaska Lands Trust appeal, I've checked with each of you. We will meet tomorrow at noon in Conference Room 224 with our attorney, the Deputy City Attorney, to further deliberate on our ruling. So I so look forward to seeing all of you again in just about 14 hours' time.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Human Resources Committee met prior to the Assembly. We had a lot of issues that we talked about. We heard from the Juneau Public Library's Endowment Board in their annual report. We heard from the Sister City Committee in their annual report. And we also had a couple of appointments. And the Human Resources Committee is recommending to the Assembly the appointment of Susan Baxter and Miranda McCarty, both incumbents, to terms beginning immediately and ending on 1-1-2020.
Any comments or objections? So approved.
We also had the annual report from the Fisheries Development Committee. We also had some discussion this past year. They've had trouble meeting a quorum. We passed a resolution to reduce their membership so that they could have a quorum. They've had three people the last couple of meetings, which was a quorum because there are only five. But we also had some discussion about whether or not this is a committee that should continue or continue in a different format. There was discussion with Carl Ugatel from Docks and Harbors and with Mr. Becker as to whether or not maybe the Fisheries Development Committee might be a subcommittee of the Docks and Harbors Board that would meet as needed. I believe that's going to be a discussion at the Operations Committee meeting Wednesday night. But the Human Resources Committee did pass a motion to ask the attorney to begin drafting an ordinance that would repeal the establishment of the Fisheries Development Committee. If nothing works out with Docks and Harbors, then maybe we'll reconsider that, but we wanted to start the process. So that was a motion passed. We also looked at the paper I put out at our January meeting on empowered board recruitment and retention, about asking the empowered boards to look at the skills that they think are needed to make them an effective board, what their current membership does. And the Human Resources Committee asked that we send that out to the empowered boards, no deadline, and that this would be a piece of information that we would use along with the questions and deliberations and applications for members. But not so that we're looking at, you know, three people with finance if they think their skills, they only need one or two or whatever. So we're going to move ahead with that. We will bring those results back to the full Assembly, given that we meet as a COW when we do appointments. The other thing that we spent a lot of time talking about was Eagle Crest. And Eagle Crest submitted to the Human Resources Committee a memo regarding alcohol sales and the possession of alcohol at Eagle Crest. And after some discussion and reading the material that you will find in the HRC packet, which is, I think, part of your packet here, the committee moved that we ask the city attorney to draft an amendment to its resolution 477. That allows vendors who rent facility to have alcohol sales if they're doing a wedding party or a retirement party. But it only deals with the main lodge, and there are other facilities there now, so that needs to get some amendment. There's a couple other things that need to be talked about, and so we will proceed with that process. But as to the issue of whether or not we should allow alcohol sales at Eagle Crest, have a vendor that has hours in a particular spot, our motion was to forward that decision to the full assembly, specifically the committee of the whole, to decide if and or how we might proceed. I talked to Mr. Nankervis and probably have our preliminary discussion on the 17th of 27th February. When is the COW that you just mentioned it?
27th.
So we will have that initial discussion with the Eagle Crest Board at that time to decide if and how we may want to proceed. We've all gotten emails. In your packet is their master plan, the memo that they wrote, the ordinance. So I would suggest that you take that out of your HRC packet and keep it with you. In addition, we also talked about some scheduling issues. Mr. Menzies, who had to resign from the Alaska Committee, also resigned from the Airport Board. And the Airport Board is anxious to replace his position, but also we've had a lot of extra meetings. And since we meet as a committee of the whole to talk about the Airport Board, we've decided to schedule April 24th, which is a normal HRC meeting. We'll just start a little bit early, to review applicants for the Airport Board. Mr. Menzies' term expires at the end of June, as it is, and one other member expires at the end of June, and we'll do both of those, make that appointment. And then on June 7th, we will meet as a committee of the whole, that's a Wednesday, to do Eagle Crest, Aquatics Board, and Docks and Harbors Board. So rather than do four in June, we'll do the Airport Board early, meaning we only have three boards to do in June as a committee of the whole. So April 24th is Airport Board, June 7th is Eagle Crest, Aquatics, and Docks and Harbors, and the clerk passed out the leave calendar. Wanted me to remind everybody to make sure that they're up to date on the leave calendar as we get these meetings scheduled, and so we were able to pick those. So that's the Human Resources Committee report. Airport Board, the last meeting, they have released an economic impact study on a redo of an earlier study on the economic impact of the airport and the Juneau economy. You can find it on their site. They also forwarded the airport layout plan, which we all reviewed at the December meeting. They submitted that to the FAA as is required. Their next meeting is tomorrow night. The DBA met and had a lengthy discussion about the camping ordinance, which we dealt with tonight. Considerable amount of time talking marketing committee, the map from down for downtown. Also some issues around membership and some divisions in that membership based on the positions on the camping ordinance and a few other things. They also had a brief discussion on Greg Capito's letter related to police coverage and his proposal that there be more of a 24/7 walking or police presence downtown. And they were going to reach out to Mr. Capito and talk with him a little bit before they formulated any kind of an opinion. The DIG met on Friday. I think I was the only assembly person there. There was only about 10 people there. And it was related to the parking management structure. Not so much solving the problem, but who manages parking and how it should be done. And they spent a lot of time reviewing all the past reports. Representative Keto was there, who authored one of those reports. They all seemed to point in the same sort of direction, that having multiple masters running parking in the same area of town, mainly downtown, has been a problem, but nobody's decided to move the other way. But I just wanted to mention to the manager that there were 10 people there. If you subtract out the two presenters from engineering and CDD and a couple other CDD and myself, there might have been six of the quote public there. Maybe time for you to sort of reinsert yourself a little bit back into that process and see where people think they are. And I think Mr. Denton may be a good source, as he's been at every one that I've been at, and sort of where we're at and how we might move that along a little bit better. Because one of the questions of the CDD and engineering folk was, what's our next step? And they weren't readily able to answer. So it may be time to step in. And then just one additional comment is the Franklin redo is going to get started here in another month. The first meeting to explain it to business people to start answering questions to set up that process is tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. At the Senate building on the third floor. And so if you're interested in what engineering and the contractor is going to tell the downtown business people about the disruptions that they're going to face over the next two or three months, I think they're going to try to be done by first part of June with this first phase so that we're not disruptive of the tourist season. 9 o'clock tomorrow morning at the Senate building. And we dealt with my presiding officer tonight, so I think that's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Barashevsky.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The hospital board met on January 31st. Welcomed a couple of new members that we appointed, Lance Stevens and Bob Urata, although Dr. Urata wasn't there, but they talked about him. and welcomed him anyway. We heard our audit, they heard their FY16 audit, they presented to the full board. They talked about their new and improved compliance program with their new compliance officer. They elected new officers themselves. Brenda Knapp is now the president, and Marshall Konzorek is the vice president, and Mark Johnson is the secretary. They thanked the previous outgoing president, Nancy Davis, for her service. She's still on the board, but she's not the president anymore. The governance committee talked about their bylaw revisions. They're working on that, I guess, again. They'll be voted on the February board meeting before coming back to this body for our approval. They've confirmed that they hired a general surgeon. They interviewed her in January, and she's accepted, and she'll be starting in August, I believe it is. And had various reports from committees and staff. The PRAC met, a very short meeting on February 8th, and they got some updates on their master planning. They talked about Skaneateg Park, and it's going to be used for staging this summer for the Franklin Street reconstruction. So they talked about that, and again confirmed that they want to make sure that it gets back to a park afterwards. They talked about the Eagle Valley Center. They had a small remodel there. SAIL is slated to run the ropes challenge course there this summer. Weddings and businesses meetings can be held at the Eagle Valley Center, along with overnight stays for up to 28 people. So check out the Parks and Rec site for finding out how to reserve that. And those are the two committee reports. The Commission on Sustainability meets on the finance meeting, so yet again I missed it. And they're still working on the energy plan, trying to figure out a way to move that forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. White.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Let's see. Travel Juno is going to have their board retreat on February 27th, and that date's going to be a recurring theme in my report, so I haven't figured out how I'm going to be everywhere at once yet. They're working on their budget and several other things. The Aquatics Board is also working on budget and some new marketing ideas. Lands Committee next meeting is, guess what, February 27th. Followed by, on February 28th, the Planning Commission is going to review some work that the Lands Committee did. This will teach you to put me in charge of a Lands Committee, because we're going to have 86 lots for residential use and 5 for preservation up in front of the Planning Commission up on Pedersen Hill. There will also be a presentation from Recycle Works, which is good because I missed that at somebody else's meeting. And everybody, don't forget, this week, Wednesday and Thursday, is the Innovation Summit at Centennial Hall. Looking forward to that. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Weldon.
Quit stealing my thunder.
What?
JEDC met February 1st, and one of their topics was outreach with assembly. So if you haven't heard from one of the JEDC members, you most likely will. And their main focus has been the Innovation Summit. On the 15th and 16th at Centennial Hall, there's still a few spaces available, so if you want to register, you can do it at jedc.org/innovation. And they're focusing on entrepreneurs. That's a big word. They're inviting the public for the Innovators Hall of Fame, and I believe there are some Genoites receiving some awards, and that's 4:30 on Wednesday. For the school board, they're in the middle of their budgeting process and taking public testimony. And if you feel like making the school board your Valentine's, their regular meeting is tomorrow night at Thunder Mountain at 6.
Thank you. Mr. Gregory.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So starting back January 10th, the Affordable Housing Commission met. The Affordable Housing Commission will be sending an annual report to the Human Resource Committee, which we should see on an agenda soon. The Chief Housing Officer gave a report in regards to a draft capital improvement plan. They have a draft plan that looks like through fiscal year 22. Some of the items include wish list items include downtown studying the downtown landslide mass wasting study, collecting housing data each year. Reviewing the CBJ land subdivision support, looking at private subdivision development grant assistance programs, as well as mobile home down payment assistance programs, and a whole handful of other programs. At that meeting, Barb Worley from NeighborWorks Anchorage came down. NeighborWorks is a not-for-profit agency that assists families that are below the 120% median family income limit into getting into long-term housing situations. So in this case, they have a program that will buy down a home loan by 20%, so families don't have to pay the private mortgage insurance, which sometimes can add $300 or more to a monthly mortgage payment. And in this case, it would be a soft second loan, so it gets paid back after the original loan. But it helps families so they don't have to pay that extra $315 a month. They talked about the housing assistance program. They have some other loan incentives. They are a HUD-approved, they teach a HUD-approved home buyer class for $99, and that helps you with a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac loan. They're a non-profit mortgage lender, and it looks like they're going to be operating here in Juneau sometime soon. You might recall that the City and Borough of Juneau has a mobile home down payment loan incentive to help families get into a mobile home. So far, as of January 10th anyway, they had closed 2 loans, so that is good. We've got 2 new families moving into homes that ordinarily might not have been able to. The Eagle Crest Board met on February 2nd. As you've heard, Matt Lillard is leaving Eagle Crest, and they have an interim general manager. His name is Nate Abbott, and he will start the first week of March. They're looking to appoint a new general manager by July 1 of 2017. And in our Human Resource Committee, Mr. Jones shared that Eagle Crest is proposing to sell alcohol up at the facility, and we will see that on a Committee of the Whole agenda soon.
And why don't we just start with you and do assembly comments and questions?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, tonight was certainly a deep discussion on our housing and homelessness issue here in town. And I hope that we can continue to make progress on the homelessness issue and rallying to support phase two of Housing First and seeing that through to fruition. Also looking to, I think we should work towards getting additional mental health care treatment in our community. That seems to be one of the major underlying problems for those that are currently homeless, as well as substance abuse treatment. And just continuing to work to provide long-term housing for those folks. But I appreciate everybody's comments tonight, and I hope that we keep plugging away at the problem.
Thank you. Ms. Weld? Ms. White?
Ditto.
Ms. Bonacheski?
Just I look forward to working with people, everyone on the assembly, and as well as the hundreds of people who wrote to us about this issue to begin to move the needle. You know, the many passionate comments we heard confirm to me once again about what an amazing community we live in, and we're charged with helping make it better. So I look forward to doing that. Thank you.
Mr. Jones?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Let me start out with my thanks and appreciation to the Dockton Harbors Board and the manager for the work they've done, the Dockton Harbors director and the manager for the work they've done with UAS. It's my understanding that that there remains a good possibility of negotiating a both-and solution for Auk Bay instead of an either-or. And I think a situation where we have the possibility of growth in our marine facilities and also in our university and the research and the maritime sciences out there. It's very positive. So I appreciate the hard work that's getting done out there. And I hope as soon as you're able, you can bring us an update with all kinds of positive news in it, Mr. Manager. I want to applaud CDD staff. February 4th, Mr. Jones and I apologize if I missed any other assembly members. We're out at DZ Middle School for the Lemon Creek Design Charrette, for the Lemon Creek Area Plan. Tremendous public participation and some really excellent ideas and a good process that kept members of the public engaged, whether they were there the whole morning or whether they were there with two shouting children and one running one and could only stay for 20 minutes because they had to get the kids to the next activity. Everybody got included in that, so well done. And then I have two action items this evening. The first is that it came to my attention, not because of the appeal itself, but it's an outgrowth of the issues, with the land trust appeal, that some of the areas of land that used to be part of the Mendenhall Wetland State Game Refuge and that are now conservation parcels, where folks understand at present that the status quo holds with regard to duck hunting, technically are not available. And so I would ask the agreement of the body to work with the city attorney to draft an ordinance that would just sort of make that technical fix so that the status quo, the former Mendenhall Wetland State Game Refuge boundaries, are available for legal duck hunting, and bring that back. Okay, I'm going to regard the mayor's nod as we can get that drafted. And then the other thing is that we had at the beginning of our meeting Kathy Tran from Thunder Mountain High School, who came and asked for city support for the OSOG conference. That is the Association of Student Governments. It's 250 or 300 students from all across the state. They will be hosted at Thunder Mountain High School. It's a great, great conference and a wonderful thing to have back in the capital city. It's been many years since we hosted that. And I would ask that we direct the manager to meet Ms. Tran's request for support. Mr. Manager, do we have $1,000 in the Assembly's hosting line within the hosting budget?
Through the mayor, I believe that we can find $1,000 in that budget. Don't have it right here in front of me, but I believe that's very likely.
So, Mr. Mayor, I would ask that we support that and so direct the manager.
I have a question.
Question?
I didn't want to ask her, but I wondered if she was planning on this being available for both or just for Thunderbolt.
And I know there's a student, there's an advisor here, but my understanding is that the conference is hosted by Thunder Mountain and that the students are attending from all across the state.
Do you want to come up, please? What would you state your name and address, please?
Okay. I'm Hannah Marks at 4470 Columbia Boulevard. And so JDHS students will be attending the conference, but Thunder Mountain's hosting it, so they don't need the money.
Any further questions?
I just want, so everyone from JDHS who's attending can afford the registration.
Yes.
Okay.
Any objection? All right.
That's it for me. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Becker.
Nothing. Thank you.
Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Let's start with the good and lead to the bad. First off, I'm appreciative of all the public input we've had. Some other members have spoken to that as well on the controversial topics that we're taking up, and I appreciate that we're tackling those tough issues. It's bringing out a lot of comment from the public, and it's bringing out a lot of interest, and we're shining a light on things that we haven't done in a while, and I think that's a good thing. There's lots of good things going on around town. We've just had the wearable art that just happened this last weekend that my wife really enjoys. We've got the legislative session that takes the heat off of us most of the time, not this week or a couple of weeks ago, but most of the time takes the heat off of us. I attended with Representative Keto, the mayor, and Ms. Weldon, what I will call the fifth grade musical performance at JDHS last week. And it was great. We walked down there and that nasty weather we had went in there, and every fifth grade class in town was represented there. And the Juno Symphony was also there playing, and it was great. And it's been a little while since I've heard a musical performance in there, and it was really nice to have that. We also have AML going here next week. We've got an international hockey tournament at the end of this month, and I want to remind all the men in here that tomorrow is February 14th.
Are you making
good job?
I'm reminding myself at the same time, okay?
To the men?
No recommendations. I'm just trying to keep us all out of hot water. Ms. Sika, do you have something for me? Okay, in just a minute, I'm going to ask you to put that up if you would. So now we get to the bad. At our last assembly meeting, we had another sticky topic. We had a resolution supporting the road money before us. We had a packed house. We had a lot of people testify for, a lot of people testify against. And again, a topic that brings some passion out with folks. I was parked downtown for this. I had my assembly parking permit in the window of my vehicle, and this is what I found on my vehicle when I left.
Could take a while.
Or it won't show. I had these three birds, multicolored birds, window painting.
It's a very slow computer.
My vehicle.
Oh, my goodness.
Here it comes.
I thought my computer was bad.
Yeah.
memorize that. Yeah.
This is old dial-up, isn't it? The Commodore 64 still warming up? Actually, I had one of those. I might have had two even. I don't know.
Hey, that looks like an Apple II GS to me.
I played Pong on it.
Oh, my goodness. So this was your vehicle, you said?
Yep. This is what I found on my vehicle. Following.
What will it be tonight?
Me. What the heck?
You're killing us.
Killing me, too, here.
10:30.
Da-da-da. This is real slow. Okay. As you can see, I had a sticker, and I got a sticker that was modified.
Uh-oh.
I'm not sure who felt it was appropriate to vandalize my vehicle, but the vandalism was consistent with the tone set at the meeting. There were stickers that the pro-road and the anti-road folks had made up. One said, "I support Juno Access." The other one said, "Get your priorities straight." Now, as it speaks to tone, I think there was a big difference in those two. And my bumper sticker reminds me of the modification of the fall elections, where one political party had their campaign signs vandalized by people who didn't support that candidate. Some of the vandalism had profanity, just like that. This pattern of behavior is not lost on me, and it's not gone unnoticed. And it's unfortunate, because we should be able to politely and civilly agree to disagree at times. Thank you.
So we're not going to have to look at that too long. Thank you, Mr. Nankervis. There's no one signed up for our assembly comments and questions. Continuation of public participation on non-agenda items. No one signed up for. So I would entertain a motion to go into executive session for Leah.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move the assembly recess into executive session to receive information, to discuss a matter which by law may be permitted to be confidential, specifically the update on the lawsuit involving the Cruise Line Industry Association.
Sharp break.
We've got to ask if the public objects.
Anyone objects?